face to face. It's the State of Combat podcast on CBS Sports with the Brian Campbell, back, jacked, underwritten, and supported by that performance enhancing audio. Of course, it is pro wrestling time, folks. I may have dropped a little Randy Savage on you for a second.
Nothing face to face. Nothing face to face.
We're actually will be face to face with you today, not only in the audio form, giving you the pro wrestling edition, previewing WWE's Extreme Rules card this Sunday, and wrapping up a pretty busy week across all promotions. But the second half of this show, as your bonus fans, you can also catch it in video form on YouTube, getting all kinds of in-depth on that extremity on Sunday. Not in the ECW arena, but you get my point indeed. Your boy BC back from Vegas, little washed, little jet lagged. Little washed. Well, I don't know who that voice was. Sorry. Let's continue the intro here. Yeah, that's it. You know, that's all I got for you. Hope you enjoyed our UFC 239 coverage. Hope you're doing well out there. Yes. Let's bring in the Silver King. How about that? Let's do it.
Say hello to the bad guy.
He's a new homeowner, folks. He's all grown up. He's the Silver King. His birth name is Adam Silverstein.
Hey, now. You're basically like 48 years old at this point, just away from home for a week, and you're saying a little washed. No,
well,
sir.
You got to understand something here, Silver King. Las Vegas sucks. The food is so bad. It's so overpriced, and unless you are buying the next level stuff, the $125 Kobe steak. No, not NJPW day one. We'll talk about that later. Unless you are actually buying the damn meat that you're looking to put in your mouth, if you will. I think you have.
Let me tell you a piece of meat that I enjoyed.
you refuse to play yours, and I know you have the clip of it too.
I got some.
And I'm curious, did you cut last week's sausage clip? That's what I need.
No, I didn't. I'm behind
on life.
You know.
Are you kidding me? Stick it right in me, right? Hold on. Let me. That better get added to the board.
It's on the board, Silver King of Christmas Past. My point here, Silver King, is Vegas food just hurts, man.
Yeah, but you supplement it with New York food. I mean, you got to go to the city for a day or two. And, I mean, I know I was there for 2 weeks, spent 1 week with you. We did not starve. You know, we ate really well when we were out in New York. And I know you do. I see your expense reports. I approve them. I see you eat well every time you go to the city.
Sometimes I do well. I like more street food options. LA is the place for me, man. The street food is just, it's like gourmet level, and it's some like old Mexican lady on the side of the road with a little grill in front of her out of like the back of her cargo child molester van. It's like, it's perfect, you know? You can feed a family of four for like $5. Vegas, they won't even let you in the door for that much, all right?
Well, they do have those, like, don't they have those all-you-can-eat buffets and stuff?
Yeah, for, like, $48, but yeah.
Oh, they're okay. I didn't know they're – well, you have to play a little bit, and, you know, lose, and then you get to go play, do that.
Well, I played enough on the parlays of the fights. I lost plenty. Thank you very much.
Hey, Silver King, 8 straight combat sports main event victories, betting the rounds. I am on a massive, massive roll, both MMA and boxing. Listen, I enjoy MMA. I'm learning it. Brian is teaching me. Brandon is teaching me. But combining MMA and boxing, 8 straight main event winners for the Silver King. You got to love that.
Wow, folks. Follow him online at Silverstein Adam for more hot betting tips. Wow.
As long as it lasts. It may not last long. Yeah. But Pacquiao, look, we'll see what happens with Pacquiao.
I'm fired up for that fight, by the way. How the hell is Manny still doing this? I'm sure we'll have a boxing podcast to break all that down. Don't forget, folks, what it's all about this week.
It's all about defiance.
All you people out there freeloading, listening for free, hey, that's fine. The audio is free. There is a price to pay, though, for sticking this in your ear, and that's heading on over at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, 5-star review, wherever else you can find us, all right? Find us and put your stamp on it. Speaking of ear holes, Adam, you know when you're in like a luxury hotel, and instead of the regular Q-tips, they give you those little like matchsticks with the thing on the end. It's like an elite Q-tip,
Yes.
And those can be good. And look, I'm a Q-tipaholic. I clean my ears once or twice a day, which is horrifically bad
for
you.
So you don't buy into, and I don't either, but you don't buy into the people that say you're not supposed to use Q-tips in your ears.
Those people are doctors and people that put warning labels on Q-tip packages. And I do buy into it because in my younger days, I have shut off hearing in certain ears for like days at a time because I've gone too deep. So I had that matchstick thing over the weekend. Yeah. I'm like, oh, great. I'm going to get a nice cleaning going here. Get a nice little inter-hole itch if you want to go there with me. And I hurt myself really bad. And it didn't shut down hearing. I've been through that before, but it hurt like a bee. The next morning, I've got a puddle of blood coming out of my ear hole on the white pillow. What the hell did I do to myself? I felt like a savage. Not Randy, but I felt pretty, gross. All
right. What's wrong with you in boutique hotel bathrooms? I mean, you're slicing your head open WrestleMania week.
It's true.
You're bleeding out of your ear. I mean, God, man.
Careful. That is very interesting.
You have to remember, you're the talent on this show.
Yeah, I need
Silver
to King, protect the
Silver
face.
King's here to support, but if you get injured, I mean, I may need to step up into a major role.
If I get shot, Lyndon Johnson over here is going to take over this program. It's going to be fan-friggin-tastic. All right, and speaking of that,
and speaking of mailing Katie
No,
Vick.
No one's speaking of that. We got a show. You want to get into the show? What do you want to do here?
We do, and we should start the way we do start on State of Combat with the main event.
This is the main event!
And we're going to talk about a lot this week. We have WWE. We're talking NXT. I know you guys want that. I get your tweets all the time. We're talking NJPW and AEW, all before we preview WWE Extreme Rules. But Brian, we really have to start with WWE TV this week. And, you know, 2 weeks ago, we were swearing off of it completely. Then Paul Heyman joins Raw, gets us amped up again. And we almost reverted back an entire calendar year this week where Monday Night Raw was extremely disappointing and SmackDown on Tuesday was extremely good. And it made you say, oh, my God, is this the SmackDown of old again? But I want to start with Raw. They had as much goodwill and momentum as WWE has garnered, you know, in a year or so, maybe even longer, from last week's Raw into this week's Raw. And correct me if I'm wrong, they squandered all of it.
No, they didn't. They didn't. I don't know why I am uber optimistic this week. Actually, I do know why. But I'm going to stay in the pocket of optimism and powers of positivity because I don't want to be defined either way, Adam. I don't want to be defined as a cynic at wrestling, and I don't want to be defined as overly optimistic because I do think there are way too many overly optimistic guys who have just been fans for 30 years, and they're like, I don't care. Whatever Vince does, I'm fine with it, and that's certainly not me. Was Monday night a step back from the week before? 1,000,000%. I got my buddy Josh giving me texts up the kazoo telling me how much I don't get it. And we had one episode of Paul Heyman and then Vince couldn't handle it. And Vince jumps in and puts his Vince paws all over it. To certain degrees, that actually probably is true. And it did taste like Vince in the wrong spots on Monday. But I'm going to sit here in regards to Raw and actually keep the rose-colored glasses on and tell you I didn't hate this week. Step back, yes. Hatred, no. Are there certain things they did on Monday wrong, Adam, that in previous weeks your boy BC would be going nuts and being like, see, I told you so. They don't care about us. Why do I waste my time with this crap? Yes. But something has changed. Even with Monday taking a step back, the flavor of the broadcast has changed. I'm tasting Heyman. I'm tasting freshness in there. The dialogue's different. The presentation's different. And it's different enough that I'm actually willing to give them a mulligan or two in certain areas because I get what's happening right now, Adam. As long as Vince's heart is still beating, his paws aren't coming off of it. So what is actually happening right now is they're figuring it out. They're figuring out what the future is going to look like the rest of this year. They're figuring out what the flavor is going to be. Week one was heavy Heyman, and it was great. Week two, a little too much Vince. But I'm saying there was enough new in there where even though I was uber annoyed at the lameness of the rules in that opening match on Raw, which you blew up on Twitter.
I have to talk about
And it, I'm yeah. fine with that. I actually was able to suspend that and really enjoyed the match and was entertained. And I know there's people probably listening to this going, BC, you're a fraud, bro. A month ago, I told you to calm down in your DMs and just enjoy it. And you told me that's impossible. Yeah, because a month ago, they weren't trying. And right now, they're trying. And right now, I see light at the end of the tunnel. And that light is the fact that when they move to Fox for SmackDown in October, at the same time that AEW launches, it's going to be different because it has to be different. So the fact that they're trying now to get out ahead of that and they're tinkering with the formula, okay, step back. Yep, I acknowledge it. But I actually enjoyed a lot of it. I didn't watch it live, and instead of fast-forwarding through the crap out of it like I expected myself to, I actually almost sat there for 3 full hours and watched it all in real time. Kind of liked it. What happened to me?
I mean, I'm not going to say the show as a whole was terrible. That's not the right word. But it was more than a step back when you consider last week we were juiced for 3 full hours watching Raw. There was never a moment last week where I said, oh, what time is it? How much more of this crap is left? But this week, they gave us what I can only call great for a mixed tag team match, a great mixed tag team match, with 3 of the 4 best workers in the company, Seth Rollins, Andrade, and Becky Lynch, and then Zelina Vega, who's totally acceptable, no issues there whatsoever. But Brian, I don't know what dunce, what moron, what idiot came up with a mixed tag team elimination match in WWE where there is no intergender wrestling allowed, so the women can't fight the men. They have to be eliminated. The rules took me completely out of the enjoyment of the match. I'm struggling to find the words right now. Becky eliminates Zelina Vega. Zelina then jumps off the apron. Becky remains on the apron.
Yeah, that was pretty.
She can't get tagged in. What would have happened if Andrade pinned Seth? Then it's 1-1. Do you not have a winner? Is the match a draw? The entire thing was ridiculous. The storyline and the rules behind it, especially when you consider 1 week ago they had a mixed tag team match with Mike and Maria Kanellis, and the ending of the match was Becky Lynch tapping out Mike in a submission. So there's zero consistency. I understand what they're doing with Seth and Becky. It feels like they're ramming it down my throat. They came out with a new shirt called The Man's Man that Seth Rollins now maybe has to wear at some point, which I hate using this word despite it being popular in 2019, but is as cringy as you get. And I don't understand the necessity to throw this storyline down our throats where they're simultaneously ignoring Andrade and Charlotte's real life relationship. Now, maybe they're choosing not to put that on air, but they were together at the Hall of Fame ceremony. So there's just so much disconnecting from that. And then my biggest issue, Brian, is despite all of my storyline and match rule problems with that, it was still a hot ass segment.
It was
great.
But they use that
to open, and they give us the Roman Reigns, Gary Gerber, Shane McMahon garbage to end the show.
I'm left
sitting there like,
I should have hated
who's
that.
Who's booking this shit?
I should have hated that. And I didn't. Like, you knew something was going to happen crazy when he limped out, when he was extra limping out in the mask. So you're like, okay, something's going to happen here. I pop for it. Now, in reality, is that a suitable go-home main event? Absolutely not. Did they blow it out of the water the next night on SmackDown? Yes. Were there problems with Monday? Yes. But you know what? That opening segment with the mixed, despite the horrible rules, it actually furthered the storyline, like, the right way, like you would want to do on a go-home. And there's going to be a mixed tag match that originally we're not excited about. And it's lame that, by the way, the babyfaces would accept this match. It's lame that we have to see Corbin again in this. But yet I thought Corbin and Lacey were actually great this week. And that opening segment kind of got me jacked to move the storyline along. And I know you're talking about ramming things down your own throat and saying you don't like it, and I can respect that.
But we're going to stuff it down your throat so hard that you're going to enjoy this. You're going to feel it.
All right, that was just weird. I'm not going to rehash my point, but I was able to forgive, and I enjoyed it. Maybe I was just beaten down from long travel, but I enjoyed myself Monday as a wrestling fan, and then for them to come back on Tuesday and kind of put the train back on the tracks. We don't know how much Bischoff was involved yet. We're led to believe that he's coming next week, but something's changing. It felt like they took a little bit of the Road Dogg SmackDown formula and mixed it with where we're headed new. And I love Tuesday, and I got enough Heyman on Monday that I'm with you. And you used the word cringe before, cringeworthy, and you said you didn't want to use it. Can we talk about that Ronda Rousey, Travis Brown video?
I liked it.
Oh, my God.
I thought it was sweet. I thought it was her showing she misses wrestling. Look.
Dude, hold on. I have a button to press.
That is one of the worst things that you've ever said on this podcast.
Let me explain.
No, dude, that's not just cringe. That's a banana hammock of cringe. That's
Ryan,
just bad, bro.
Let me separate this. Her relationship with Travis Brown, and we are not here to criticize anyone's relationship.
Oh, I'm here to criticize theirs.
But that is always weird to me. It's a strange relationship that I don't understand. If you put that aside, the video itself, it was entertained. I was sports entertained.
Oh,
D-Von showing up at the end was funny. I thought it was cool. And she was playing with that Hulk Hogan doll. I had that as a kid, that exact doll. That kind of resonated with me as well. I liked it, man.
Silver King, it was like really, really, really bad poor man's Mad TV wannabe Saturday Night Live level type of stuff. And you know she's doing it thinking she's good at it. And it's just
cringe. No, she's having fun at home.
And it's stupid.
Bored.
And then on July 4th, her and Travis put out a live Instagram video. I happened to be on Instagram at that moment, and I clicked on it.
I didn't see this.
And it's the two of them drunk, cooking, 4th of July, smacking each other is behind, talking about how each other's ass is so great. It was like way too much of an inside look at who they are. And it was like a little trashy. And it was just like, oh, man.
Well, like I said,
but you know what? I came away saying stay away. I came away saying, Rhonda, like, you had an amazing 1 year. It was amazing. You were an instant success. You were a natural. Stay away, because that video of you jumping out of the shower and landing elbows on the, like, it's just cringe acting. It's really bad, Adam. Thank you.
It was not good acting. Of course not. And again, the relationship is strange, but I thought the video came from a real place for her, and it was sweet. It was like, hey, I missed this. I had a lot of fun doing it. And we forget she was damn good at it for first year. You may not love her promos. You may have thought X or Y was not as good as it should have been, and that's all legitimate criticism. But Brian, man, women don't main event WrestleMania without her.
Okay, yeah, that's great. I'm not talking.
She had the best first year since Kurt Angle. These things
are
true.
I'm not ripping her legacy. I'm not ripping what she accomplished. I'm ripping the cringe as hell video she put on the internet.
All right, I completely disagree. You guys tweet us. Let us know who you agree with on that.
Oh, please. Please tweet us. Please. I guarantee 80-20. I know I'm sure there's a few weirdos out there, but I guarantee 80-20.
No, from the people I've spoken to, most of the reaction was positive. I'll be curious to see it, though. Before we move off of the start of this, though, do you at least agree with me? I know you may not have fully agreed on the opening segment. And by the way, I do side with you. The Lacey Evans and Baron Corbin insertion there was very good, and Lacey really laid in that women's right. It looked awesome.
Never heard you say that word before. Hopefully never again.
The insertion. But do you at least agree with me that on Raw, and Raw is really where it appears to be mandated, the rules to get around having action during commercial breaks are truly terrible. Like, it's definitely taking me out of the show, and it's so overly noticeable that when they don't put a weird rule in a match, you know it's going to be a quick one. And when they do, half the time they do, it's nonsensical. If you want to have a 2 out of 3 falls on a rare occasion or once a show, that's fine. But when you have elimination matches, restarts, 2 out of 3 falls, all this stuff, it is really, really too much.
I don't agree that it's taking me out of it. It's actually not affecting me at all. I'm fine with it. I think it's lame that it's just like, okay, to fix this problem we think we have, we're going to do best of 3 falls matches like multiple times every week. That's lame. It's a crutch to lean on. I did get a couple of different DMs from people who were actually in the crowd at Raw this week and were like, you don't understand how bad it was to have these long gaps. Well, I've been to a lot of Raws, guys. There's long gaps all the time.
But this now means that there's always a gap.
Well, there's actually always a gap, because you know what they used to do on Raw was wrestle, do the intro, have the people come out, and then right before the match starts, head to commercial. And they would do that a lot. And then to make it even worse, they'd come back from commercial and do a backstage segment. And guess what? The whole time, the first wrestler's still standing there in the darkened ring. So no matter how you cut it, it's lame in the end. And it's necessary to have a 4-minute gap for selling ads. So if you're in the arena, unless you're going to let the match play through live like they do on SmackDown, it's pretty lame. But again, as a viewer at home, not really that. It's not really affecting me that much.
Here's I said this last week, I believe, or maybe the week before. They went from 0 to 60. They went from taking a break during every single match and now never taking a break during a match. Why don't you go directly in the middle? Have 1 2 out of 3 falls,
yes,
or elimination match or match restart. Have another one that goes to break during the commercial. Do some rest holds. It's okay. People aren't going to lose their minds. And then have a couple short matches. And try to book your segments so that if you do have a long match, it takes up an entire segment and you're not doing 3 backstage segments, then starting a match, then going to commercial. This can be booked way better if you need to have that. And more important than anything, BC, SmackDown, the play-in match where you can watch, you know, watch during the commercial. You're the same network right now. Instituted that on Raw as well. I don't know why they're not doing it. And one more thing on the Reigns. Didn't you think it was going to be Montez Ford behind the mask? Like, they were talking to a tall, skinny man backstage. You had Montez Ford on the show the entire time, and then they come out with a short, more stocky man, even though Alexander's obviously in amazing shape. It was totally, completely a different person. Whereas if Montez Ford had been in that getup, you can at least say, oh, it's kind of a similar shaped guy.
No, I didn't think that at all. I actually thought it was Kofi, and that doesn't make sense because his hair is very large, but
right.
I did think it was Kofi the whole time, and I don't know how I would have acted if it was him in the end. I figured that was storyline-wise, Taker's not there. That's probably the best way it would make sense, have Kofi, the other giant babyface at the moment, help out Roman and screw over the bad guys. But the use of Cedric, like, I get people didn't love it. I love that he was used and that he was used great. And by the way, he took a stiff-ass kick to the face and was bleeding from it. So I didn't hate all that. And you mentioned the Street Profits. So it's probably time for me to mention it now, that's a big part of why I love the crap out of Raw.
But they're not doing anything.
They're doing everything for what I want right now.
They're promoting the pay-per-view. That's all they're doing.
They are doing such next-level stuff on the mic to me, when in reality they're given not much, which is right. They're given go do it. Yet they're hitting those moments so far out of the park and taking the cool factor of their characters and just like times 10-ing them in my eyes. And they're nailing it that if for now, while they still have business to do in NXT, still have to eventually lose their titles before being called up, they're almost in like this. What are those two old white guys in The Muppets that sit up in the theater?
I don't know their names. But
Waldorf and Stadler or whatever. They're almost in that kind of role where it's like, let's throw the camera over to these hilarious guys who are just going to kind of like do impressions, throw to a tease about the pay-per-view. And like it's they're doing so much with so little, Adam. They shouldn't be up right now. Yet because Heyman's involved, they're there and they're actually being put in a prominent role. And it's great. I love it. There's not been a moment that they've been on the screen that I thought the quality's gone down. Like, I think across the board, I am so entertained and I'm laughing and I'm enjoying it.
Oh, don't get me wrong. I agree they're doing a great job. It's just all they're doing is previewing the upcoming pay-per-views and occasionally mentioning other storylines that don't involve them on the show. I would have rathered they introduce them with, just like they did on NXT, with the Street Profits Snapchat videos where it's them outside the arena, maybe with fans doing stuff. And they're doing the same type of content. They're still previewing stuff, talking about, we can't wait to start on Raw. We're going to revolutionize this and X, Y, and Z. But you just have them backstage talking into the camera, talking about, we want that smoke. And look, I want that smoke. I'm with them, man. I want to see them in the ring. I've already mentioned previously, I think they should be on SmackDown because they need tag teams. That's another story.
But there's no more thing anymore of who's on Raw or SmackDown.
What WWE is failing to do, and they're actually, even though you don't like it, they're succeeding to do it with Aleister Black.
Oh, God, no.
But they bring people up, and they don't introduce them. One of the things I liked so much about that AEW Fyter Fest.
This does introduce them, though. This is the equivalent of having vignettes.
They're not
vignettes.
Saying what they're about, what their motivations are, why they're there.
Yeah, but we're learning, we're getting to know them more each week. Let's say we had never heard of them before. We didn't watch NXT.
Sure.
They're entertaining, and we're getting to know a little bit more about them each week, and it's no different than in the 80s showing Kamala in the jungle screaming for 3 weeks in a row. It's like, it's just a different way to do it.
I guess, but I kind of want a little bit more about their background. They're NXT champions, talk about having the titles. I want to know more about them and less using them as a device to attract the younger audience and promote your upcoming pay-per-view. Tell me also, you can do that, that's okay, but tell me also why you're there and what your purpose is. Because right now they're not, and maybe that changes after Extreme Rules, and they just wanted to force them on TV. But we saw what happened previously when WWE forces NXT talent on TV just to put them there and then kind of forgets about them. To their credit, they have actually surprisingly done a pretty good job, not counting EC3, with this group of NXT call-ups. They're doing something with Aleister Black. Ricochet's the U.S. champion. You know, Heavy Machinery was in a title match. They're in another one.
They pushed Nikki Lars Cross. Hard. Even though Lars blew it, they pushed him pretty hard. And they tried.
They tried and failed with Lars, where they should have just fired him. And Nikki Cross is in now a title match with Alexa Bliss and Bayley, two of the most over women on the roster. So credit to them for actually doing a good job. Again, minus EC3. But it just makes me a little bit worried for the Street Profits, where one of the things that makes them so great is not just their personalities, Montez Ford's athleticism. And we aren't even seeing that.
Well, right,
we're not even seeing highlight clips of them.
Because
nothing.
It's too early. So I'd rather get this too early stuff and learn who they are and get to know them. Like, they're going to have weeks upon months upon years of wrestling on Raw until we're sick of watching them. They still have to finish on NXT. I don't like when guys do both. I don't like when you're the War Raider, the War Warriors, or whatever you want to call yourselves on. Like, that was a horrible call up at the wrong time. They still have business to finish.
They just did it. These guys are champions too, though. I mean,
I know. Like, it's the only way to do it right is like a KO type situation. That was done right.
Right.
The War guys were rushed. And look, this, at least they're not wrestling. At least they're still the NXT champions. And you can go watch them on NXT, which kind of means they're almost like a commercial for both.
Yeah, but that's why I would have liked Ford to be the Gary guy, because then he's still able to do all those athletic moves. You're like, who the hell is this guy? This is a new guy. Pulls off his mask. You're like, oh my God, that's the guy that's in all the backstage promos. And Roman's putting him over in the ring. I love Cedric. Nothing against Cedric, but that segment was weird when you have the guy in the mask and then that team loses. Usually they go over. It was very, very odd. The only other thing I want to talk about from Raw, BC, we'll move on to SmackDown in a second. Bobby Lashley squashed Rey Mysterio, who came back after 6 weeks. People were up in arms about it. Honestly, I loved it. I thought, like, they're putting Bobby Lashley over. This is great.
I loved it. And I didn't even have a problem with a lot of the tweets I saw, because I was watching on a delay, about, and even DMs from our listeners of like, oh, come on, Bobby Lashley's almost killed the week before, and now he's coming back like nothing happened. Well, it's like, well, we did get videos with him from the hospital room, and the announcers did sort of be like, oh my God, this guy's a freak. He's back already. And yeah, I actually liked it a lot, because when Mysterio came out to do the open challenge and to get the mic, and he's back so quick from injury after having to give up the title, I was sort of like, oh, all right. Like, this is kind of lame. So then to have Lashley run through him, it said something. And it was sort of the perfect big man, little man way to get Lashley back over and set him up for bigger things. So
yeah,
these are these little nuances that I'm saying on Monday that I just, they didn't offend. I'm so used to being offended. I'm so used to being let down, that now that I'm kind of consistently getting things that encourage me, yeah, I'm willing to let other mistakes sort of pass for now.
I'll agree with that. Outside of the rules from the first match, the mixed tag elimination match, which were patently offensive. They were offending our intelligence. They were literally insulting the intelligence of their audience with those match rules.
Well, one thing on that. Had that, you said, what would happen if they tied? What happened if Andrade won? I was willing to give them the chance of, what does that mean? Do we do a playoff? Like, what does that mean?
But why don't we know? You're supposed to know the rules going into the match. Rules matter, man. We're talking about AEW wanting wins and losses to matter. The only way wins and losses matter are if rules matter. And there were basically, it was just like, hey, we're putting this out there so we can do a 2-segment match with a commercial break in between. And it was terrible. But outside of that, I agree with you. I was not offended by the rest of the show. But when you put Roman Reigns and Cedric Alexander masked in a main event and you rush the finish because you're running out of time, you didn't pace the show right, it just left me with a really bad taste in my mouth from Raw that left me concerned for SmackDown. But then all of a sudden we get to SmackDown and we have the cold open with Kevin Owens and Dolph Ziggler and then Bryan. I mean, people are calling it pipe bomb. It didn't reach that level to me, but a pipe bomb-esque promo from Kevin Owens crapping all over Shane McMahon.
It was insanely great. It was great. It was the best thing that happened in wrestling over the past week, and that's even up against some stake-level NJPW matches that we'll get to in the G1 opening. The presentation of KO, it was like half Steve Austin, half CM Punk, and it sort of made up for the fact that he had been bounced around recently from heel to face, back to heel. Now, what is he now, a tweener? It works as a tweener. Do you know what else this sort of like took in terms of bad taste? Like, Shane was on Raw too much on Monday. So then to see Shane have a monster role on Tuesday, you're like, oh, man. But then you hear the meat of Kevin Owens' speech, of his, you know, poor man's pipe bomb. And it's just brilliant. He referenced the thing we're all thinking. Hey, McMahon, you came out just 6 months ago and said everything's going to change and you're going to serve the fans. And you haven't. And on top of that, you're pushing Shane insanely hard. And on top of that, Buddy Murphy's not getting any time right now, among others. And look, you know what I thought about when I thought of Buddy Murphy.
From the moment we saw him, we thought, sex.
Thank you, Sasha.
Sasha did not like that. Did not like the two bears in my front yard today either. But it's just like when you put that kind of writing in that like throws shade at themselves and says what we're thinking, you know we're going to get hooked. KO brought it on the microphone. The fact that he was bleeding a bit from the parking lot brawl made it even better. Shane perfect in shutting him down a few times. Yes, predictable that KO was going to come back in the main event. Yet it happened so sort of perfectly that, you know what it did, Adam? It made me now not angry the fact that Roman Reigns has been in this feud with two or three people that's going nowhere over and over every week. Now I feel like it's going to end. I feel like Roman's going to be allowed to leave in a KO Shane money feud, even though it's going back to the well, to the idea of like renegade babyface against the authority, which has been played out times a million. We want KO in a role like this so badly, and Shane has been so good despite too much TV time lately, that it's going to work. And it made me not care that Reigns was in that spot. And I also kind of popped when Reigns got the win in like a babyface way. It's what that entire angle needed.
The fans popped for Reigns too. The entire crowd, it was, even before Owens showed up, they were popping for Reigns when he did the dive over the top rope. And then they popped again when he hit the spear and won the match. And you look at the reaction that they gave him on Tuesday, and then look at the reaction they gave him on Monday at the end of the show. And it just goes to show you that it's always been WWE's booking, not Roman Reigns, that has stuck the foot in the mouth and prevented fans from truly allowing him to get naturally over. I thought the pipe bomb promo, if you want to call it that, just for lack of a better term, was fantastic. And the segment backstage with Dolph Ziggler was great too in the parking lot. The only thing I'm going to say, in recent history, Brian, like the last few months, we have heard an almost identical promo, not nearly as well done, from The Miz, who was fueled by anger, not so much, you know, Owens, who has just lost his mind. And we heard it from Roman Reigns, I believe, in the segment where Vince McMahon came to the ring and they added them all in there. And then maybe Finn Balor got the number one contender match. I forget exactly. But we've already heard that same promo and the same storyline twice.
True.
And to be fair, nothing has changed. And right. The only other thing I'm going to say, we just saw a year ago the Kevin Owens Shane McMahon feud with that ended in a Hell in a Cell match with Sami Zayn saving Kevin Owens and so on and turning heel. So
these are all great points.
Doesn't this all feel very repetitive despite it being great?
It does. But I think it's almost as if when the Heyman and Bischoff announcement happened, it's almost like that was the end of a creative season and this is the start of a new one. Even more profound than WrestleMania in theory is supposed to end WWE's creative season, but it doesn't always. That's why we have Payback/Backlash and
Never.
Saudi. But I'm like, to your point of, well, we kind of just saw this recently, I'm almost willing to say the last 6-9 months were so bad that I don't care. Like, it's as if it never happened, and this is a new show today that they're trying to figure out. I'm actually willing to go there for them. And the most damning thing you said was, though, the fact that we did see a KO Shane feud, and it was like okay in the past, but it wasn't fueled with this type of switcheroo with, you know, KO as a tweener, Shane as an obvious heel now, and this type of way. It's got potential. So let's I got rose colored everything because I feel like it has to change, Adam. The Monday Raw we just saw this week can't be what Raw looks like in October. Won't be. I don't think it will be. I think everything's changing, and now we got to just be patient.
I'm okay with that. And I want to clarify, just in case people misunderstand, because sometimes you do. I loved it. Like, I loved every minute of it. I popped. I'm just trying to say, like, it felt there were – when I looked back on it preparing for the show, I was like, wait, we heard this promo before. I think the difference can be if they stick to it. Because Miz did that one promo, then basically lost to Shane. Reigns did it, and then they dropped it. If they continue this storyline and have Owens actually take Shane McMahon off TV by beating him at SummerSlam, then I think there's something to this. But as it stands right now, I loved it. It was great, but I'm in a wait and see, you know, situation. Something else that happened Tuesday, Brian, Finn Balor and Shinsuke Nakamura both had their first match on TV for Nakamura in like 4 months, for Balor, you know, in probably a month and a half or so. And I got to be honest, they said first time ever. I candidly assume they fought in NJPW, but I don't know that to be true. But whatever, first time ever in WWE, I want to see so much more of this that I thought they did a great job giving us an appetizer and letting Shinsuke win. We always talk that we hate when challengers beat the champion to earn a title match. They already beat them. You know what I mean? But I thought this one was perfect.
Everything about this was perfect. The same way that reuniting AJ with the club and turning him heel the week before led you to believe that maybe that's a little bit of Bischoff fingerprints on the way that we're handling this now. And maybe it's a just shut up and give the fans what they want, what they've wanted for all along. This
give us what we want.
This
give
was,
us what we want.
Yeah, this was a full extension of that. It was sort of like, yeah, give me Finn Shinsuke right now. But not with the Vince crap. Let Shinsuke come out there. He's a heel, then be a heel. And he was a heel. There was a lot of stomping going on. And him doing that in that fake Elvis suit is actually badass. And I love it. And this isn't a match that's rushed for Sunday's pay-per-view card. This is them sort of slowing it and saying, hey, this could be a tease of an IC title feud coming your way. Now, look, do I like when the champ loses clean? No, I never do. Unless you have a storyline reason. But I'll suspend that if this feud looks like that. I mean, look, I can't help but get fired up, Adam, about what the future is going to be like with Bischoff there. Yeah, there's a lot of questions. He failed in TNA. He's not following the product today. But I think there's a potential desperation in the fact that, you know, reading Meltzer's writing about Eric's personal life, the recent bankruptcy with his production company falling apart. This is like a last chance that he almost doesn't deserve, like, type of thing. Like, they're putting the ball in his hands and saying, go for it, save us. I'm really excited about the things that he does really well historically as a booker, implementing that into the WWE system with the people that are already there running it. I mean, he's great at the idea of taking heels and propping them up to feel badass like the NWO. So, you know, Jack Crosby
and
I,
letting them win on occasion.
Exactly. And Jack Crosby and I were talking offline, like, could you imagine what he could do with the Undisputed Era and Adam Cole one day on the main roster and have like a NWO 2.0? Like, I'm fired up. This may actually be the era of you get what you want if Vince is actually going to listen to these guys. Adam, this guy, what a time. Like, damn.
It's not even get what we want. All I want is good TV. I want good scripts. I want Game of Thrones season 1 through 6, not season 7 and 8. It's not that difficult to give us continuity, storylines that matter, and build up characters. I don't say it's not difficult, like, that I could do it, but I could. I could do it for a month. I couldn't probably do it for 12, but I'm also not paid. I'm not experienced in TV writing, you know? And that's what we want from all of this. We just want to have guys that are talented, that deserve, not deserve based on people like them and they deserve a title and you deserve a chance, but deserve it based on having the wrestling talent and ability to entertain us, and us wanting to see those people, heels, faces, doesn't matter, on the screen more, and less people like Lacey Evans, who was super green, or Baron Corbin for 9 months. If you want to give us Baron Corbin for 2 months, okay, it probably would have worked, but they're extending it way too long. I almost felt refreshed, as angry as I was, that Nakamura wasn't being used, especially after that really good WWE title match he had with Kofi, by the way. But Nakamura not being used, Finn Balor not being used. I was kind of incensed about it. But them coming back, it was like, man, I miss these guys. It's really good to have them. And I'm really excited for a potential feud at SummerSlam. So to me, it worked in every possible way. Before we move on to the last thing I wanted to mention, Brian, for SmackDown, I did want to bring back Kevin Owens real quick because I forgot to bring this up. Hero or Zero, the stunner being his new finisher.
I don't know if it's actually his new finisher. We're going to have to see that in his in big matches on pay-per-views if he's sort of done with the pop-up powerbomb. But I'm okay with it. It's a badass finishing move. He obviously has Steve Austin support. It's not like Austin's the first one to ever do a reverse neck breaker anyway, but I get...
No, but he does it with the kick.
I mean, when you're doing the kick, you're setting it up. Look, if they want to start pushing KO in this badass poor man Steve Austin direction, I'm here for it. Do you know what we used to say when he first arrived on the main roster, KO, and was nasty and awesome and great and had a mix of that psycho killer look with the understanding of how to do it in a Vince system? We were like, man, one day his babyface potential will be through the damn roof. And even though he's had cups of coffee with babyface and the New Day thing was fun with the Big O, Austin level babyface, like, I don't even care, Adam, if it's completely poor man's. And when I say poor man's, I basically mean second rate stealing from. I think he can even make that work. You know, I'm sure he'll add his own dimensions to it. But yeah, Hero, I'm fine with that. That's great.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he's trying to so much be Steve Austin as just an edgy face. And Austin was just the perfect one. So everyone, even Becky, we compare to Steve Austin because that's the one. That's what we want. We want someone to fill those shoes in both a male and a female role. I don't mind the stunner, but I almost wish the stunner, like, you know how sometimes Austin would do the stunner and the person would like pop back up into a standing and he would do it again. I wish to use the stunner as a signature move. And then the guy's wobbly, throws him into the ropes, pop up powerbomb, because the pop up powerbomb is unique to him and it's freaking awesome. No one really does just a powerbomb anymore. Whereas this, it's almost like every time I see it, it's like, oh, he's doing Austin Stunner. And I want it to be Kevin Owens' finisher. You know what I mean? So I'm okay with it being used. But it's just like with Dolph Ziggler and the zigzag. It's like the zigzag was great. Now it's the super kick? That's so generic. He uses the zigzag as a setup move? So I always have an issue when they do something like that. Maybe it's just me nitpicking. Last thing here before we move on. I know you don't love the Aleister Black promos. I really do like them. But I thought they also hit a home run this week with the split screen and announcing his opponent for Extreme Rules, Cesaro. Was that a big enough reveal for you? Yes or no?
Absolutely not. And I've already fought our boy Jack Crosby over this. And look, here's his response, and I'm sure a response of a lot of people. BC, you don't want an Aleister Black Cesaro match on a pay-per-view? Are you kidding me? Yeah, sure, I'd love it under different circumstances. But this circumstance was supposed to be big. They took weeks to tell the stupid story of, will somebody come find me and fight me? Even though, guess what? Aleister, we've already seen you on the main roster for like 2 months before that, with people showing up every week to fight you. So it's stupid. It's not consistent. And then to go this level, and look, did I like the build? No. If you liked it, whatever. I'll get on you for cringe rousey. This, I'll give you a free pass. Whatever. If you liked it, that's fine. They tried something different. Again, I like ambition. It just didn't work for me. But they set you up to believe, Adam, that it was going to be big. It was going to be new Bray Wyatt. It was going to be somebody we forgot about, like a Jason Jordan. It was going to be maybe John Cena to come in there and put him over. Like, it could have been anybody. And it's Cesaro. And it's not that Cesaro doesn't make great matches and I don't love him, but he was just on TV the past few weeks, and he's kind of dipping closer to the mid-card, Adam. The idea of him ever being world champion is over. He's really good at what he does, and he was great in the tag team with Sheamus, and he can put on great matches, and he's a worker, and he's figured out how to be the best he can be on the mic, but he's not that big reveal. And to have that reveal happen the week before, you know what would have been fine? If he just walked around that chair a couple times and you saw his hand and you're like, okay, light skin, who could this be? And you start getting excited. And then if it was Cesaro on Sunday, look, I wouldn't have popped, but maybe they go right away and have a badass match. And I'm like, all right, you know what? Cesaro pushed him. Cesaro made him. That's great. I know that can still happen, but this was like, wah, wah. Like, oh, if it would have been different if Cesaro had been off TV for 6 months, it would have been different in a lot of ways. This was just like, you got me excited for this, or you got me angry for this. You got me is really my end answer, yeah. And I'm not happy about it.
You know, my biggest issue, and it always is with these things, is that he's a Raw superstar fighting a SmackDown superstar when they have an entire roster that they can use. I mean, if you want someone of his level, you could use Apollo Crews. You could use Buddy Murphy, debut two guys at the same time. You could bring back Sheamus. I know he's hurt and whatever, but if he's healthy, Sheamus is somewhat equal to Cesaro, but at least he's on SmackDown. You could bring in
Rusev.
Yeah,
but there's no brands anymore, Adam. You know this.
You could bring in Rusev to
yes.
do this.
That would have been perfect, yes.
You could have brought in Shinsuke if you didn't want to yet do the Balor feud. So there are guys on your brand. We now have Cesaro, a Raw guy, against Aleister Black. We have Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross, both Raw women, against Bayley. And we have Samoa Joe, a Raw superstar, against Kofi Kingston. Where are the SmackDown challengers for titles and in matches like this? It doesn't make sense. But I do agree with you on one thing. Had they just done the hand circling around the chair and built up the suspense, I would have been totally fine with Cesaro showing up at the pay-per-view, because at first I would have been disappointed, and then I would have said, you know what? This is going to be a hell of a match. And they would have put on a hell of a match, they will. And Aleister Black will go over, and it's going to be great. But now you're ruining the surprise. You're not giving me a reason to tune in to Extreme Rules to say, oh my God, I wonder who this is going to be.
Exactly.
That didn't sell me a ticket. That didn't sell me anything. It just told me, oh, you're going to have a match against Cesaro. You'll like it and it'll be fine.
Like, they went extreme. To go to the extreme of doing the, will somebody come fight me, and then somebody knocked on the door. Like, dude, I was like wanting something wild. I wanted it to be Vince knocking on the door and going, it's me, it's been me all along, and like I'll be your satanic new manager to put you over. I won't walk to you to the ring, but I'll be your higher power. But like, I wanted something next level. Dude, I got Cesaro in a mouthpiece. Like, come on.
Dude, what if all you saw was a guy stand behind it in a suit and a sledgehammer hit the chair?
So who would that be? Triple H. Tiago Santos. What are we doing here?
Triple H.
All right. Yeah.
Tiago Santos can't walk.
Yeah, you know what? There's a storyline there. There's, you know, I was your NXT papa, and now you're, you know, I want to make sure that you're good enough. Yeah,
well,
damn
you
right.
Fight? No, you want to fight? Fight me. Like,
yeah.
That type of, you know,
yeah.
That type of situation. All right, anyway, that was the main event, BC. We have a lot of show to get to. Before we get to it, we got to hear a quick word from our friends and sponsors.
The chilling new original docuseries on Paramount Plus.
Why did he kill his family? The answer lies across the ocean in a woman named Sylvie.
She's a can model.
Where desire leads to deception.
I ended up spending $12,000 and $15,000 a day.
It was addictive.
I can't get you out.
And obsession leads to murder.
Who did this to your family?
You can't really maintain a fantasy forever.
Control Alt Desire, now streaming on Paramount Plus.
Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, BC, we're back. And look, it has been a significant period of time ever since this company took a little respite in Bridgeport, Connecticut. But we're going to catch up on some NXT because we simply haven't for a few weeks. And I, the Silver King, apologize for that, BC. I got a couple topics to discuss with you. I know you kind of ran through it all recently. Start with Tyler Breeze, right? So he had that tag team match with Matt Riddle, and then he had this singles loss to Roderick Strong. Both I thought were great matches. So far, he hasn't really gone over, you know, in his return to NXT. But do you still think him coming back is a win?
Yes, because he's coming back as a veteran in his, mid-30s. So his role will be to put over the young guys. We know this. And he doesn't seem to have the diabolical heel presence where a win here would make sense only so that person could come and get it back from him later. He's really making fun matches. And he presents himself as not comedic jobber mid-level tag team guy. He presents himself as NXT superstar with a real air to him. It's been great for me. Yes, I'm a Tyler Breeze super fan. I told you from day one ish, he's not the Jannetty of the damn Fashion Police. He was always the star. I always believe his problem is he's a little too poor man's Dolph Ziggler, poor man Shawn Michaels for the main roster level, but he knows his character well and he can work. People forget that he can work. This has been fun.
Go watch. If you don't think he can work, go watch the Roderick Strong match. And we talk about the rest of the Undisputed Era. We really don't talk about Roddy Strong. And look, he's never been a champion in NXT outside of the tag team where he didn't even really win the titles, although he helped. And who knows what his main roster potential is if they do break up Undisputed Era before they get up there. But damn, this guy is good in the ring. And that match with Tyler Breeze, man, that was one of my favorite things that I've seen in NXT in a good while for a main roster TV match. We always also talk about how they introduce people and the way they, you know, really do that. They don't really on the main roster do stuff outside of the ring, outside of the arena. I really want to give NXT credit. I hope you saw all of this to the Adam Cole Championship celebration going to Ohio, to Gargano's pizza place and to the wrestling training school, flaunting the title, basically telling all those kids they ain't worth shit. And the Matt Riddle MMA training montage they had last week where they're showing him beat the crap out of one of those heavy bags straight up on the ground. I know, you know, you were a Matt Riddle fan back in UFC before he was ever a professional wrestler. I loved both of these to such an extent that it made me nostalgic for like WWE old school promos where they used to vignettes. Yeah. I mean, you know, where they used to do stuff like that.
I mean, this is Triple H's handiwork, obviously, and it just kind of teases you of what the main roster could look like if he was handling it. And again, not just from a NXT TakeOver Great Match standpoint, but from these type of little old school nuances mixed with new school flair. The Riddle thing gets me fired up about the excitement of, could you imagine Paul Heyman running Raw and calling up Riddle to go into a feud with Lesnar where it's about MMA versus MMA? Oh my God, does that have to get you fired up? But this Cole thing was, Adam, it was perfection. It was absolutely perfect. Cole is so damn suave. We said it before after interviewing him that he really does make up for having a smaller, thin body just by being a Bond villain, as he told us, is what he models his you know, sort of talking after. I mean, he's got it and a half to go to Gargano's Pizza, to go to the gym and just crap on all these young kids and say, yeah, go take a pizza, bring it home with you and eat it because you're never going to make it. I mean, I was enthralled. I could not turn away from the TV. It's just so perfect. Thank you. Thank you. And Paul, we trust both Heyman and Levesque. And, this is what it could be like, Adam. This doesn't have to be under the hood on the JV level. This is what it could be like. It just makes characters matter. You're stretching them. You're giving them a personality. You're putting them in other situations. It's Million Dollar Man going to the jewelry store. It's that kind of stuff that never happens anymore. And when it does happen, in very rare instances, it's way too Vincified. It's never cool. It's always overdone. Give us the simple damn beef.
That, you know, that's a great point, the Million Dollar Man, because I was listening, this is probably a year ago, but I was listening to Something Else to Wrestle With on the network, and Bruce Pritchard would constantly talk about, he was the on-set producer, on-scene producer, when they used to just, like, randomly go places to a graveyard for The Undertaker or a jewelry store for the Million Dollar Man, and just shoot these vignettes with these, you know, professional wrestlers, and they did so much to enhance their character and tell you who these people are away from the ring and from the stadium. They are, to give them credit, WWE is succeeding doing this right now with Ali. That stuff on SmackDown is fantastic, but Ali's been doing that since he was on 205 Live, so they almost kind of lucked into that happening. You know what I mean? That was either a Triple H production or an Ali production that they're just continuing, so good for them. But stuff like just the Matt Riddle thing, having him in the gym, beating the hell out of a bag, talking about why he's so great as a fighter, you know, beyond just being a professional wrestler, I thought it was really, really fantastic. So, BC, last week, you know, I praised the hell out of the Shayna Baszler, Io Shirai NXT Women's Championship steel cage match. Tell me you watched it.
Oh my God, it was so good. I mean, it wasn't good. It was great. It was straight up great. It was a perfect finish. I mean, for everybody that popped over the Kofi Kingston steel cage Ziggler finish as a way to say, okay, the match wasn't great, but that was a fun, inventive finish. This finish was even way better than that. I love when heels accidentally get sort of pushed into winning in these type of situations where it's a huge steal and escape for them. Very similar to what was it? The SummerSlam NXT TakeOver Gargano Ciampa match with the handcuffs where last man standing, right? Where Ciampa was only standing because he was hanging from the handcuffs. Like those type of just sort of like, oh man, are the best things ever because the babyface got screwed and should have won the match. But the fact that they went next level on us and then had Shirai turn heel, oh my God! Wow! I took the screen, I pulled my upper lip up, and I just rubbed my gums across it. Like, are you friggin' kidding me? I didn't know I needed that. I needed that. Beating down Mrs. Gargano and just acting like a crazy foreign biatch. Loved it.
Yeah, her cutting the promos in like angry Japanese, just like Asuka would. And we know we miss Asuka, and you know, I hope she's back as soon as possible in the ring. We saw her on Tuesday, but like, I need Asuka in my life. I need her on TV.
I need her
badass,
out of Vince's hands.
Suited Asuka.
Yes.
That's what we need. But Shirai was great, man. And I found it was either on Twitter or Reddit. Someone translated what she was saying in Japanese. It was badass. Let's not gloss over. LeRae did a splash off the top of a cage onto, I forget if it was Shafir or Duke, but one of them. That was top to bottom. The best steel cage match of the year so far, which is not, you know, there's not a huge allotment of them. But it's the best cage or cell match, honestly, that I can remember in quite some time. I'm not saying ever. I'm not saying even 5 years. But, like, in the last, like, year, 18 months, outside, not counting, like, the war games, I really can't think of one that I enjoyed more than that. That
was
great.
Let me put it on this. Do you think this was a better match than Asuka, Nikki Cross, Last Woman Standing?
Ooh,
because that I went back and rewatched that.
That was
weeks
so
ago.
Damn good. No, it wasn't. Same echelon.
Yeah,
I mean it's top tier.
I mean that
because those are TV
matches.
I mean, and neither of those really hold the candle to like Sasha Banks Bayley if we're talking about a takeover match, you know. But
They're closer than you think. I mean,
no, that match was incredible.
They're different kind of matches. Those
but
are obviously...
both were great, and both were normal NXT TV show matches. Both had Mauro on the call.
No. And they were not normal NXT TV matches. They were pay-per-view quality on NXT TV. They were.
I'm sorry. Okay. I'm sorry. I was thinking. Okay. Yeah. You're saying pay-per-view quality, but they were on the NXT TV show. Right. You're talking about the Asuka match where she jumps off the ladder onto the
suplex
table, right?
Off the ladder through the
suplex.
Announce table.
Right,
yeah.
Right. Okay. Yeah. That was a TV match. I got confused for a second there. But dude, sick. I'm so happy you got a chance to see it. Did you watch that first match from the NXT breakout tournament, or did you have to fast forward through that a little bit?
I didn't see that. I FF'd okay. through that.
I'll just give a quick shout out. It was Cameron Grimes, the former Trevor Lee, against Isaiah Scott, the former Shane Strickland. They're changing all these guys' names. Everyone probably in the entire arena expected Swerve to win that. He didn't. Cameron Grimes did. He's a badass, Brian. His name's Cameron Grimes because he's grimy. He's from Cameron, North Carolina, trained by the Hardy Boys. Big ass dude.
Thick accent. Thick ass.
Trevor Lee,
accent.
Very thick accent. These two guys, I mean, they got a wealth of talent in NXT. These guys are going to
well,
be
That's why I'm okay with like Street Profits potentially going up too early. I'm okay with, you know, potentially Heyman or Bischoff grabbing NXT talent that we love, not ruining them in a Vince style, because takeovers, last time I checked, there's still only 5 matches, which is very strategic. And what that means is you don't need NXT to be a giant pool because it's already overwhelmed with talent and they're bringing in new people all the time. So the factory's humming right now. It's doing fine.
To be fair though, Brian, they have quote unquote NXT talent there now that they can utilize far better. Chad Gable, Bobby Roode is still sitting there. Buddy Murphy's unused. So like, use the guys you got. They have horses right now. My biggest issue with that, with calling people up, is there are like no more tag teams in NXT. They're down to like Oney Lorcan and Danny Burch, the Forgotten Sons and the Undisputed Era. That's it. That's the list. So, I mean, if you're going to take the Street Profits, let's create some new tag teams. I know there's one with Riddick Moss they're working out with Dan Matha, but Like, let's get some stuff going on where you can replace them. You can backfill. Yeah, if not,
Trips knows what
are
he's
you
doing. He doesn't need you ranting against him. He knows exactly what he's doing.
Okay. Well, I'm allowed to be critical of them. Brian, I know you badly. You made sure you watched these matches. You want to talk the debut of the NJPW G1, first time ever in the United States of America in Dallas. It was last Friday, Saturday. I forget.
It was Saturday. It was ill booking in a way. You know, you put that up essentially head to head with UFC 239 International Fight Week, John Jones, Amanda Nunes, you know, arguably the biggest card of the year for UFC. So you're automatically uphill battle. We know the situation. They booked this date well in advance before they knew they weren't going to have Kenny Omega, before they knew that they would have FKA Dean Ambrose, but not be able to use him. So certainly they were up against a lot, and you, it's a sore thumb and we have to talk about it. The arena was empty, and it was a little bit sad. Maybe people thought it was embarrassing, but the action more than made up for it. There was like enough of a crowd where it wasn't a train wreck, yet at the same time, every time they did a wide shot, it was a train wreck. It's just,
well, the fans were great though, to be fair. The ones
the fans
that were there
were
cared.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And the action was amazing. I just feel bad for them that happened. I wish they would have not done it on a Saturday. You know what I mean? Even if it was a loaded combat sports weekend, do it on a Friday or a Sunday or whatever. And I don't know. It could have been handled, obviously, a lot better to get what it deserved, Adam. It deserved to have a sellout arena there. It did deserve it. This is G1, which we all love. And you can't tell me with All or Nothing and Double or Nothing and All Out and All In and Behind and Reach Around, all those shows they're doing, they sell out in a minute and a half, that we couldn't sell out a G1 with the right people there, right?
You probably could have in Dallas if they had the entire crew, if the Bullet Club never split up, if those guys didn't start AEW. But they need to either do one of two things, be in smaller arenas. I mean, they were in the American Airlines Center. Like, it's,
but it's this Mark Cuban connection, though, there.
Of course. It's a huge arena, though. So either go to a smaller venue or stay on the coast, because you could put that in a 20,000-seat arena in New York, New Jersey area, out in California, maybe not during International Fight Week in California, but probably still. Wrestling fans and MMA fans are still – there's, you know, many differences. And they would have sold it out, or they would have come super, super close. They definitely would have sold a lot more tickets than they did. You can't be in Dallas, which I know is a transportation hub, but you can't be in Dallas on International Fight Week without all that talent. It just was a recipe for disaster. Credit to them. They announced Fighting Spirit Unleashed. They're going to do 3 shows, I believe, in Boston, New York, and Philadelphia. Those are the right cities to be in. They're going to smaller venues. They're going to the Hammerstein Ballroom in New York, which is freaking awesome. They're going to the 1300 Arena in Philadelphia, a small venue. That's where they need to do these shows. I know that they wanted to be ambitious with the G1. It was great. I appreciated them coming to the United States. But Dallas, without Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks, that's not going to work for you.
No, it was just bad timing in a lot of ways. You know, I'm sure they didn't anticipate AEW launching that big and all that and stealing some certain key talent. But you know what? When it came time to watch the matches, heck yeah, they delivered on day one of the G1, obviously a week before. I believe day two is what, July 13th? So we record this on a Wednesday, July 10th. So this weekend is, you know, it's going to be time, Adam, to where you and I are going to have to start, if not waking up super early, at least finding out on Twitter which matches were firecracker ones and having to go back and watch them, because we got a few of these in these opening day, and we got some sound from, you could argue, somebody who deserved a spot on Mount Rushmore.
Absolutely.
The great Black Sabre Jr. was there. Now, Adam, this was last minute. This came together. I was traveling. This is long. This is very long. Okay? People didn't love when Tristan was falling over himself last time. They said,
how long are we talking about here?
We're talking about pretty long here. But, you know, we may cut it at some point. But Black Sabre Jr. is coming with some sound that he calls the first edition of color commentary.
Love it.
SOC, it's me, your boy, the human Dusty Finish, FKA Shinsuke Blackamura, BKA Black Sabre Jr. Calling to talk to you about the afterglow of the G1 Climax Night 1 in Dallas, where not only did they provide the in-ring product, that piece of meat that Silverstein is known to enjoy, that Wagyu steak, but they took it, they marinated it for at least a day in that fresh, crisp Mark milk, that feel spot activation that we all love. That's right, boys and girls. I'm talking about wrestling milk steak. Anytime you go to one of these shows or when you watch them at home, I know a lot of us are known to fast forward through some of the tag matches, and that's just New Japan 101. You're going to get your interfaction clusters, the 6 or 7 hot minutes, and get out of there. And for the large part, that's what we got here. We saw G.O.D. pretty much run through Roppongi 3K. We saw the normal Yano juice Liger shenanigans. What I will say is, a lot of times in wrestling, we talk about that companies aren't making new stars, which is why I wanted to throw some spotlight onto the Umino and Naritas of the world, the young lions that they plug into these tag matches. For my NGPW heads out there, you'll notice that these guys are going to be the future of the company, especially when you're paired with and allowed to look so good against the likes of Tomohiro Ishii and Jeff Cobb, who have their own issue, which boiled over after the match in a pretty cool set of moments. So make sure you watch those guys, and the announcers do a pretty good job of putting them over, not really going too heavy onto just who they are, what the company expects, and letting you make your own decisions. So I think before we get to the meat and potatoes, the best part, I'll address, you know, the elephant in the room. Yes, there were empty seats. Yes, it was not a sellout. Maybe a little bit of a black eye for the Revolution, but I think the equivalent is when you're a fan of a band that's not quite fully blown up yet, and they do a show in a venue maybe 20% too big, but everybody in there knows all the songs, you know all the hits, and you're just there to see them, you know, give you the best show possible, and everybody's appreciative. You don't have the guy in the fourth or fifth row, okay, so who's this guy? Okay, so who's that guy? When is John Cena coming out? For those of you who've been to some of these other shows, you know what I mean. I also am not going to spend too much time talking about the Fale Evil match. I respect both those guys and their contributions to the business, but at this point in my life, I am just not here for any Fale extended action. The first match that I did love, I will say, was obviously my namesake, ZSJ against Sonata. And it's funny, given ZSJ's post-match comments about how more or less extreme technical exhibition for U.S. fans is basically pearls before swine. I think he equivalent it to reading Shakespeare to a pig. I'll say that for our part, everyone there was very heavily invested. In fact, I caught a couple people looking at the screen instead of the action, just to see the little nuances, the joint manipulation Sabre is known for. And to my surprise, there was a massive pop when Sonata finally rode him up. It was a great match, did exactly what it had to do. Obviously, our next match is really important too, when we have Kenta making his debut for the company. And you can kind of feel just this ebb of emotion. Everybody was so happy for Kenta as he made his entrance. It was like that guy who you've been great friends with for a long time, but he's in a bad relationship and you kind of lost track for him. But that's always going to be your boy. Then finally he gets out of that relationship and he comes out for a night and everybody's like, man, I really miss that guy. The match told a great story, you know, exchanging strikes from two of the stiffest guys in the game. But another little subplot was, if you follow Kenta for a while, you've known that guys have, let's say, borrowed liberally from his moveset. Your CM Punks with the GTS, your Daniel Bryans, and so on. And it was almost like not only was he saying, I'm back, but I'm back and I'm reclaiming what's mine. He took back the knee, he took back the GTS, and he almost took Kota Ibushi's head off a few times. But it was a great match. And, of course, the show sportsmanship that some of the people in the crowd were waiting for a Kenta heel turn, and he's been working a little gray, but I think he's just cocky. He's got to be arrogant. He's got to be that badass. Next, we had one of the most surreal moments I think a lot of us have seen. The Ace of the Universe, the Once in a Millennium talent, against the Rainmaker. And before the match even started, the energy in the building was just outstanding. I know because of the empty seats, they had to shoot it really tight. But I'm sure the sound came through as even before the guys locked up. There was just a 45-second to a minute long group freak out, standing ovation. Everybody lost their minds. And I wish they could have cut to the crowd because there was just grown men jumping up and down, just so overjoyed to see a match that vocally some people in the crowd said, I don't know when I'll ever get to see this again, and I'm glad that I'm here. We've seen these guys wrestle before, so I'm not going to do it a disservice by trying to describe the art that they put forward every time. I was surprised that instead of the usual draw, they went to a finish. But being the big rainmaker guy that I am, I was very pleased with the outcome. And of course, afterwards, instead of the usual pay-per-view feeling of people trying to beat traffic, everybody hustling to the aisles, filing out, we stayed, we sat, and we were treated to a great Okada promo in what is rapidly becoming better and better English. I was very, very pleased to just see everybody sit there and want to take in every moment of it they could. So I could take this time to go into business by myself, talk about a Rushmore this, a Rushmore that, but really I'd like to put over a couple things. One, I just want to thank the SLC for the weekly performance enhancing audio. I also want to say that for my East Coast peeps, anybody else, please go out and make sure you support these shows when they come to your area. You don't know when they'll come back again. You don't know when you'll have time. Don't be the guy who makes excuses and misses it, and then it's before you know it, it's gone. And lastly, maybe most importantly, I want to shout out a card-carrying member of the Revolution, a guy on the front lines who happens to be a friend of mine, New Japan Young Lion announcer Mavs Gillis, a guy who I hope you can find time to have on the show just to hear about his story and how he came to chase his dreams with one of our favorite companies. You guys have been great. I've been Black Sabre Jr., and this has been the inaugural edition of Color Commentary.
Wow, Black Sabre bringing it. Hey, folks, deal with it this time, okay? Deal with it. We don't normally allow our super fans, our friends, our family members here to go that long. But, Adam, I really liked a lot of what he said. I liked his perspective that, yeah, the empty seats were there, but the crowd made it feel like that wasn't the case, and it was a crowd full of hardcores. So from the experience of being in the arena, it didn't even matter. That show delivered. That brought it. And, Adam, like, we got real fans. I know we celebrate like the Tristans, the Black Sabre Juniors. These are the dudes who go to every giant card and they support and they give the money and they deliver and they kind of keep these things going. Like, it's this collection of like the hardcores. I love and respect these guys.
Yeah, I mean, we got the tweets. We heard the audio. You know, definitely thanks for submitting that. It was long, folks. Let's trim it down. Need more time for Brian to be able to speak on this show. But it was very good submission and much appreciated. You know, I've said it once. I've said it 1,000 times. This man should have been in the inaugural edition of our Mount Rushmore. But that's another conversation probably for another time. The only real criticism I'm going to say is, look, Tristan brings signs when he goes to WrestleMania. I didn't see an SOC sign on G1. Did you?
Wow. Wow. Okay, yeah. So you're going to sit here and call out BSJ.
I appreciate the effort, you know, but, you know, we're trying to reach new audiences here.
Right.
I think paper signs in arenas that take, you know,
yeah, okay.
20 minutes to make.
Wow. All right. Oh. Shout out to Tristan, number one in our hearts.
All seriousness, though, a lot of what he said, I completely agree with and certainly really do appreciate him. Submitting that,
we got to get into a couple of the matches that he was talking about here.
And that's what I was kind of going to start with right off the top. You know, Ospreay Archer, that was that opening match. Look, a little mea culpa for me. I got to be, you know, I didn't want to mention the name Lance Archer. You know, a couple of weeks ago when we were announcing the blocks, I know he did a little gimmick, you know, adjustment, a new look. Sold. Like, holy cow, that guy. Vince, why haven't you called Lance Archer?
Wow.
That is a Vince McMahon wrestler. He is the big man moves. He has the speed and the size. Now he finally has a look.
He's got a tramp stamp too coming out of his pants.
He does. And then working with Will Ospreay, I mean, look, I've said to you guys previously, I fully respect everything Will Ospreay does, but I'm not so much bought in on him being as amazing as everyone is saying he is this year. To me, it's still a lot of athleticism with not much necessarily behind it. Well, Will, you changed my tune, you know, on Saturday, because that was one hell of a match you got out of Lance Archer, and it was filled with storytelling. So, you know, that match, honestly, I think was my favorite match on the entire show.
I can hear Jimmy.
That was a great match. I'm glad, Silver King, you have come around and realized the year this man is having, the evolution of his career from Flippy Floppy to just full-on amazement. And Adam, you nailed it. He made Lance Archer look like Tom McGee against Bret Hart. I mean, seriously, it was awesome. The storytelling in that match of the smaller flyer Ospreay getting beat up constantly by the 6'11" tattooed weird-haired giant was perfect storytelling. Every time it looked like Ospreay was going to come back, he would get crushed again and power bombed on the apron or thrown through a table. And then Ospreay goes through the big rally that we all expect, and it's fun, it's amazing. But then, Adam, he doesn't win. He succumbs to the Iron Claw, such an old school move, and gets pinned. Look, I know that there were people who said, look, every day on day one, on G1, there's a big upset, and there is, and people had predicted that it could be Ospreay. I didn't think it was going to be, mixed with what Kevin Kelly told us, and obviously one loss here doesn't mean he couldn't win the block. That's not what I'm saying. But I was bought in this whole time, enjoying the match, going, okay, here comes the Ospreay comeback. This is going to be great. And then for them to swerve me, the stake was real. It was Ryan, great. I mean, I loved it.
The Iron Claw in Dallas. You know, like,
perfect. Perfection.
How perfect was that? It was so well booked. You know, congratulations to NJPW for that match and those two guys. It was fantastic. I mean, we could talk, honestly, we could talk Tanahashi and Okada, but it was our typical Tanahashi and Okada match. Didn't do much for me. I love them both. They're great wrestlers. It was a good match, but it was not one of their epics, in my opinion. I didn't feel that. I thought it was too early for that match in this block. But the other match, obviously, Kota Ibushi, Kenta, and you're going to get mad at me for this opinion. I just know it. I was completely unimpressed. I mean, I'm not saying it wasn't.
What?
There was athleticism, and it was good. But Kenta, compared to the Kenta that I watched before he came to WWE and the guy who was in NXT for a couple months before he got hurt, he's a shell of his former self. He did not really impress me, and it was not as good of a match as I expected. Maybe my expectations were too high, but Kota Ibushi against Kenta, the returning Kenta, you're expecting to steal the show. And like I just told you, Lance Archer and Will Ospreay stole the show.
Okay, I can't argue against the idea of Will just lifting Lance to, you know, and look, obviously Lance contributed. I'm not saying that, but like,
it was great.
It was great. I don't think this disappointed. No, it didn't go 5 stars, but you said some kind of true and false things at the same time. I've been saying on this podcast for years that Hideo Itami is a shadow of his former self. The 2015 NXT version of Hideo Itami before those monster injuries was a much different performer, had the swagger, had the better athleticism. He came back a much different person and just not the same. But the whole idea of him going back to NJP or going to NJPW and bringing back the Kenta name is about getting his swagger back and being who he was supposed to be, because he has been very honest and said, like, I wasn't myself in WWE because they didn't want me to be myself. They wanted me to be something different, and they kept angling me toward being something different. And obviously still the injuries did play a part. I felt like this was him shedding the skin and coming back more to who he actually is and being a vicious striker. And no, he's not as agile as he was. He's got a little bit of love handles there. But while it didn't give you the complete high wire Kota Ibushi possibilities, this was a Kenta match meant to put Kenta over. And I enjoyed the crap out of it and loved it.
They put Kenta over Kota freaking Ibushi in his first match back. And not even really in a great way. You may have Kota win this thing. You may have Kota challenge Okada at Wrestle Kingdom in the main event, potentially. This guy just came off his first Intercontinental Championship reign, right? And you're having him lose to Kenta, who is a shell of Kenta, versus maybe having him lose a couple matches to get his rhythm on a run.
He's a Hideo Itami was a shell of original Hideo Itami, but I still think he can become Kenta again. It'll be a little bit of a different Kenta because he's older and he's been through the wars, but give him a chance to be Kenta again. And that's what I think he did in this match. And that's why I loved it. I felt happy for him. I felt good to see him do that. He was stiff. Dude, that finish was great. He hit him with the go to sleep. His move, the move that others steal from him. And Ibushi sold the F out of it.
Yeah,
he was laid out. That was a statement win. This match was fantastic. Silver King, you missed it. It was great.
No, the finish was great. And Ibushi's sell really sold the finish. And the match was good. I'm not saying it wasn't good, but my expectations were like, man, we're going to get like a 4.5 star match out of these two.
It may have been four. It was a borderline best bout.
Best bouts.
No, it was not not for me. I got to be honest. I love Kota Ibushi, so it takes a lot for me to say that one of his matches didn't hit me in the feel spot.
Do you now hear Will Ospreay at least? I know you were listening to him in the past. Will Ospreay?
I've always listened to him. I've always heard him, but I'm allowed to have a different nuanced opinion. I'm allowed, as one of our listeners said, I forgot who, to speak in Technicolor while you're in monochrome.
No,
I'm allowed to do that.
No.
But besides that, as I said, I will restate, I was fully impressed with Ospreay. I was honestly even more impressed, just shocked, really, with Lance Archer. And good for him changing up that gimmick. It's kind of the opposite of Sonata, who is now like a male Kairi Sane. But, at least Lance Archer, looks like a real competitor. And him going over Ospreay was a shocker and a really great start to the G1. BC, before we get to Extreme Rules, we do have, very quickly coming out of Firefest, another AEW event, Fight for the Fallen. We're not going to necessarily preview every single match on this show. I really just want to get your general take on this card. Are you excited about it? Is it kind of just, it's also this weekend? It's not sold out. It's not even sold to the level of Firefest in terms of percentage of available tickets. It's in Jacksonville. Obviously, it does support victims of gun rights. And Chris Jericho is making an appearance. He will, quote unquote, have a live mic. He's not wrestling. What do you think of this show?
I kind of like where it sits with me, and here's what I mean. If you would have asked me before, I'm looking at the rundown you put together, hey, what are your four matches you're most excited for? I would have been like, who's on this card again? I don't even know. And look, some of that is because it's not time yet, and you can argue this, but it's not time yet to really care about AEW. The big thing, they had their big card. They've already announced their next big card, and what follows the next big card is the launch of TV, and that's when it matters. This past video game show was sort of just a reminder, serving other audiences, work some kinks out, try some things, get to see them. This is that again to me. There's probably better matches here, maybe you could argue in some ways, but I'm not excited, but I expect to tune in, and I expect to end up being tickled in the feel spot to get me excited toward when I really need to be. So I kind of like how they're kind of laying under the radar right now. They're giving you little bits here and there to keep you into it. The Road to All Out, that kind of stuff. Being the Elite whenever they actually give you something worth caring about on there. I'm okay with this. And you're telling me we're getting the Young Bucks versus Cody and Dustin, and considering how insanely amazing they grabbed us with that Cody and Dustin match last time, I have expectations here that this might do something to me. This might turn out to be really cool and really fun to see Cody and Dustin team up, and let's see what kind of old school 80s NWA story they can tell here in the way they book this match. Like, it could be awesome. It could be a tribute to Dusty. We don't know. But when you book that with the combination of some of these other matches, like, I want to see Brandy. How is she going up against Allie, who I loved with Impact? I want to see, look, Brandy, if you're asking me whether I care about this match,
I'm all in. Are you all in, Brian?
Oh, come on.
This match is going to be terrible. Yeah.
I'm ready, Brady.
That match is going to suck. I just got to be honest with you. It's going to be terrible.
Wow. Silver King just not into expectations, optimism.
I'm just being, not
happiness.
On that one. Listen, this is a one-match card. I mean, I'm not saying that the other ones won't be good. They will be, because it's talent. But it's a one-match card. It's the Young Bucks against Cody and Dustin.
Yes.
And honestly, for a one-match card, it's been a one-sided build. The entire build has been the Young Bucks making fun of the final in-ring moment between Cody and Dustin.
Oh, my God. Did you see them in the bathroom putting on fake blood and stuff? Love that.
It's hysterical, and they do it again this week on Being the Elite on Monday, which was a fine show. Not nothing great. It's been rough for a while. But that's funny, right? But it's completely one-sided, and I'm sure maybe Cody will have something this week on Road to Fight for the Fallen. But outside of that, like, they have not built Kenny Omega against Shima other than that they're friends, and we know this just because we happen to watch their shows. SCU and the Lucha Bros, they just announced like this week. Hangman Page and Kip Sabian, zero build.
But it has the potential to win you over, though, because it's not...
Yeah, it'll be good.
I mean, like, here's the deal. Anyone listening to this going, BC, you refuse to insult these guys, which is not true. It's only going to matter when they have weekly TV. We already know what they can do. They can sell out shows in wrestling cities, and they can put on really damn good pay-per-view cards. But I'm not here to tell you they rule until their weekly TV product makes me care about them. So until that structure begins... you can't get too excited and you can't get too angry. It's sort of just what it is.
It just almost feels like they did too much at Firefest, where Firefest should have been this card should have been Firefest, and then Firefest maybe should have been this. It just doesn't seem good. And then the kickoff show match, what they call the buy-in, they have Joey Janela, Jimmy Havoc, and Darby Allin against Sean Spears, MJF, and Sammy Guevara. MJF and Sean Spears are rivals now because Sean Spears hit Cody with a chair. But they're teaming up on the same side of a match, which is a total logic flaw for me. And now they have Chris Jericho with a live mic that I honestly feel that they announced just to try to get a few more butts in the seats. And apparently he's going to say something that no one expects, and who the hell knows what that's going to be. But you just can't tell me, and I know you're not saying this, I'm expressing this thought myself. You can't tell me they did a good job building this card. It's a one-match show, and even that one match, the style contrast between those two, I mean, maybe they'll be good, but...
I can't say it's a one-match show when you have the Lucha Brothers on it against SCU, which I know there's no story, but it could be an insane match. God, Kenny Omega's on the show against a worker. Like, we could see something, but...
But there's zero build.
Yes, because, again, they don't have a weekly TV show, so until they do, I'm not going to rely on being the elite to be a giant builder when it hasn't been good.
And Road to Firefest. They have basically 30 minutes of weekly quote-unquote TV that they can use to promote it, and they still didn't.
Okay, that's
they
fine.
Still
so
didn't.
My point was, you can't get overly excited, you can't get overly mad. Until the TV hits, they're not real in terms of a legitimate competition, and that's what they're aiming for. Don't listen to anybody. They're aiming to be a legitimate competition to WWE. Of course they are. So until they have a cable TV weekly show, they are not. They're still an indie promotion. So if you want to criticize they haven't built this, yeah, they don't have a show. And they haven't done a great job on being the elite. But look, Adam, you're getting me fired up here. I mean, come on, you got to stop.
You got to stop.
I mean, speaking of AEW talent and Enzo, did you see Joey Janela and Enzo got in that fight at the which concert was that in Jersey?
Was it T-Pain?
No, it was the Blink 182 concert.
Oh my God, it was Blink 182.
Janela supposedly came up and introduced himself. Enzo thought he was too cocky. Joey says they got into a brawl. I don't know the truth, but...
Whatever, I take Joey Janela's side. Doesn't matter.
I can't wait for Enzo to show back up on WWE television. Thank you. All right, enough of this stuff. Enough AEW, enough of this minor league stuff. Let's get to this weekend's card. It's Extreme Rules time. It's preview time. Turn on your YouTube machines. It's coming for you right now.
It's time to get extreme on the State of Combat podcast on CBS Sports. My name is Brian Campbell, along with Adam Silverstein, getting you fired up for Sunday's WWE Extreme Rules card and our video YouTube preview. If you're hearing this in our audio version, please check out YouTube. Check out our mugs, getting you wired, getting you fired up. Silver King in the house here. Bro, it's a good time to be a wrestling fan. WWE making some strides. Should we be this excited as my voice sounds now for Sunday night's show?
Well, I don't know if we should ever be as excited as you get for anything, BC. But this is going to be a good show. I mean, it's a solid match card, top to bottom. Excited at it's. There's 10 of them. Excited at what we're going to get. It's not overloaded like we get sometimes for a SummerSlam where we get 16 matches. It's not too short where not enough people are on the show. They have most of the major titles being defended and most of the major superstars that we want to see. So it's not a SummerSlam, it's not a WrestleMania, but Extreme Rules generally delivers, and I think this year is going to be another case of that.
And timing-wise, it's in Philadelphia, the home of ECW, the connection all there. But timing-wise, I feel like there's at least a little bit of pressure on WWE proper for this weekend's show, considering the recent news. Paul Heyman running the creative side of Raw. Eric Bischoff going to be starting, I think, in a week, running the creative side of SmackDown. We've seen a little bits of changes mixed with that old-school Vince McMahon flavor. So you could say, Adam, that this show, if we're going to be super optimistic, could be the first day of the rest of our lives as WWE admirers, watchers, critics, fans.
Or the last day of the first half of our lives, either way, because like you said, there may well be a new starting point for WWE on Monday as they move into the Fox deal for SmackDown, their new USA Network deal for Raw, and certainly competition in the form of AEW coming in October on TNT, BC. But with that said, Extreme Rules is going to get underway Sunday. We're going to get underway talking about it right now. We have the Cruiserweight Championship that we're expecting to be on the kickoff show. Drew Gulak defending his Cruiserweight title against Tony Nese. Tony Nese looking to win it back, BC. You know, this match, they often are putting these Cruiserweight matches on the kickoff show. Does it deserve a little more main roster billing, or is this the right spot for this type of match?
This seems like the right spot. These aren't the two sexiest, most charismatic Cruiserweight contenders or champions that we've seen. In terms of this actual match, look, I love the idea of Gulak as champion. I think it brings a lot in there. You can't take the belt off of him this quickly. I hate Silver King because you know I love the Cruiserweights and you know they deliver on these pay-per-view cards. I hate telling me, give me 7.5 hot minutes and get out of here. But for this match, I'm kind of stuck on that. I don't think the storyline here really necessitates a barn burner, a classic. Give me Gulak with the dragon armpit sleeper holding back up that belt.
Yeah, I think Gulak retaining is kind of a no-brainer here. But it's as simple as they took all of the most exciting people, Ali, Cedric Alexander. I almost called him Cedric the Entertainer there for a second. And Buddy Murphy, they took him off 205 Live. So now we're kind of left with Drew Gulak and Tony Nese. Not that I don't like them, but they're not really main roster, main show caliber performers, or at least not in a show that is this loaded. So for me, I'm going to take Gulak. I'm going to get the hell out of there and move on to this Aleister Black Cesaro match. We've already seen Aleister Black on the main roster in WWE, but they're almost acting as if this is his debut. And Cesaro, obviously, they just announced him as the opponent Tuesday night on SmackDown. I think it's going to be a great match, BC. Maybe just not the most exciting choice in WWE picking Cesaro for Black's first, let's call it, opponent.
Yeah, you can listen to the extended podcast this week on the State of Combat to hear our thoughts. And here are my thoughts. I don't like the build. I don't like the opponent choice. I certainly didn't like the reveal. That doesn't mean I won't like the match on Sunday, as obviously Cesaro, an incredible worker who can do the stiff style well, should work really well opposite Black. Black Mass, one of the best finishing moves in all of professional wrestling. You have to put Aleister Black over here, considering the effort put into retooling his character at a time when it didn't seem like it really needed it. All right, enough negative stuff. They're going to deliver with a good match. Aleister Black's going to win.
Yeah, I mean, if they give this 15 minutes, we're talking possible match of the night. I mean, there's no better person to possibly put Aleister Black over than Cesaro in terms of just in-ring ability. Now, if you want to talk storyline, yeah, they could have gone with Cena or Rey Mysterio or someone like that. But Cesaro and Aleister Black have the potential to be one of WWE's best matches of the year. So I'm really curious to see where they're going to put it in the card, and also curious just to see how Aleister Black wins. Is it easy? Is it going to be in 5 minutes? Or do they let these guys really compete and go after it, BC? And talking about guys who are really going to go after it, the SmackDown tag team scene has really become interesting. You have Daniel Bryan and Rowan as the champions, and they're defending against New Day, Big E, and Xavier Woods, and Heavy Machinery. I think the last pay-per-view, Stomping Grounds, you and I were both surprised at how well Heavy Machinery succeeded in a tag team title match against someone the caliber of Daniel Bryan. Now you have Big E and Xavier Woods, New Day, one of the best tag teams in WWE history. I think this match has the potential to steal the show as well.
It certainly does, especially that match you referenced where they allowed Heavy Machinery to be workers. And certainly these are big guys who are good athletes, but Daniel Bryan worked hard to put them over. With that said, and as good as the build has been on TV, showcasing the comedic elements that Heavy Machinery do well, I can't see WWE having the guts here to put the title belts on them more than those paper ones that they were wearing. What were those called? The Cook County Championships, whatever those were.
YOLO County. Yeah,
YOLO County, you only wear them once. I only think it comes down to, are we going back to the New Day? Is this a soft finish blow to set you up for maybe that title coming off of Kofi Kingston? And now at least you have the tag team belts back in the family and the faction. Not really sure. I'm more likely to predict Daniel Bryan and Rowan keeping these titles because they're doing such an amazing job with them. Bryan on the microphone is some of the best stuff we've seen in all of wrestling.
This match will excite us, though, Adam. And the fact that I don't really know 100% which direction WWE is going or really should be going should bring some curiosity at the very least.
Absolutely. And Brian's entire, you know, aura of, hey, we're here to elevate the tag team division, put it in the main event. It really loses steam if they drop the titles, even if they're dropping them to the New Day. So for me, it just really doesn't make sense for there to be a title change. In this match, though, I think there's a little bit more likelihood that we see a title change in the Raw Tag Team Championship match between the Revival defending the titles against the Usos. Now, the Usos are looking for their seventh tag team championship in WWE. The Revival have had two title reigns ever since it's come out that they may be on their way out of WWE at the end of their contract. So that puts this match in a really interesting, you know, situation. Do they give the titles to the Usos and maybe are realizing that Revival is eventually going to leave? Or do they stick with the Revival and allow them to continue being tag team champions and find a new set of contenders for them?
Well, look, we're already skirting the line, toeing the line of the whole dirt sheets and how much you want to believe, how much you want to allow that stuff into your thinking as you look at this. If the title belts come off of the Revival here, is that a tell that they are leaving? It's all very interesting and certainly adds some kind of juice to this matchup. I think the match can be fantastic. I'm never against the titles going back on the Usos. Their promo work has been incredible in this new iteration of them with the penitentiary, with the darker colors. It would be tough to see the Revival exit WWE main roster, despite holding the titles a couple times, without really ever getting a push, without really ever getting being put in something where it made them look cool, rather than seeing them feud against the B team or seeing them take everybody's finisher at Raw 25 at the Hammerstein Ballroom. No, I will not let that one go. With that said, prediction-wise, kind of feel like it's going back on the Usos. I don't think Vince and WWE was ever really high on these guys. And I think the recent quote-unquote pushes they've gotten as pseudo-members of this Shane faction that's been all over TV, seems like that has come to an end. So unless you're going for some kind of 2.04 horseman and you're taking the Tully and Arn qualities that Dash Wilder and Scott Dawson bring, maybe they do give up the straps and maybe they head on over down south to that other promotion.
Yeah, the only reason I'm guessing that Revival is going to keep the titles is simply they just got them. And we talk all the time about WWE hot-shotting title changes so frequently that they just got the titles. They're doing well with them. Yes, that's true. They're not really working with Shane anymore, despite that. Those 2 weeks were actually pretty good when they were kind of almost four horsemen-esque light versions with them kind of in that tag team role. I like them. I want them to keep the titles. I think more importantly, we need new face tag team championship challengers on the Raw show. And if you give them to the Usos, they're looking for another heel team. So give me the Revival. I don't necessarily know that it's going to happen, but I'm hopeful. We'll move back over to SmackDown BC. We have Bayley defending the SmackDown Women's Championship against Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross in a 2-on-1 handicap match. This is our first quote-unquote extreme rules match of extreme rules, not that extreme here. You know, Nikki Cross was basically on TV this week talking about being co-champions with Alexa Bliss. Do you see them actually doing that?
I hope they actually do that. This has been obviously teased before in the past. I believe it was KO, Kevin Owens, and Chris Jericho who had you believing that they could be going in that direction, which WWE didn't. I like the chaos the idea of co-champions brings just as much as I like the New Day using the Freebird rule and having anyone be allowed to put the tag team title around their waist and defend it. Obviously, we know where this is headed. It's another Alexa Bliss friendship storyline in which she's more of a bully using the other person. But the fact that they've gone so over and above in having Bayley and others tell Nikki Cross that she's being used makes me wonder whether this is all a setup to continue to get Nikki Cross over. Maybe not necessarily into a solo title run, but maybe give a co-champion title run here with Bliss and Cross to help that facilitate their eventual departure from each other. Maybe that elevates Nikki Cross further. But Adam, I don't even want to talk about any of the three in this match. I want to talk about the elephant boss in the room, Sasha Banks. Do you know how many times in the build to this match they've told Bayley, you don't have any friends? You're not good at keeping friends. You don't have anyone to get your back. Sunday, We gonna see this? We gonna see the return of the boss? The dirt sheets tell you she's a lot happier. Her little long weekend is over in terms of being angry. She's under contract for a while. Might be time.
Yeah, I mean, I think she has 2 more years left on her deal, maybe a little bit more. She just spent this past week in Japan working with Maiko Satomura and maybe learning some stuff. Maybe that's part of a video package announcing her return. I don't know. Maybe it was just a nice trip. But look, you don't know how much you miss Sasha Banks in WWE until Sasha Banks is gone from WWE. And she's been gone since April. To me, that is the storyline here. And that's no offense to really anyone else in the match, but they are definitely setting this up to allow fans to expect that Sasha Banks comes in to save Bayley at some point, help her retain the title. Now, my hope and your hope, I'm sure, is we want to see the boss, the legit boss, Sasha Banks, come back. We want to see her turn heel again on Bayley. So maybe she saves her, retains the title, and they start the feud that they should have finished a year ago. Let me change that. They finish the feud they should have finished a year ago and go into SummerSlam in a SmackDown women's title match with Bayley having the title and Sasha Banks as the challenger. That's the only way I see this panning out to a way that gets me excited, because you know what doesn't excite me? Co-champions. It devalues the title. It's ridiculous. The stipulation sucks. I'd much rather see another one-on-one match and have Nikki Cross be outside the ring doing something. But look, you saw the graphic that our producer John had up there. Alexa Bliss is a 5-time women's champion. Can you actually believe that? And they're going to make her 6 and have this one be co-champions with Nikki Cross?
I actually think we're going in that direction. I think not only will the heels win, but you will get Sasha back. And it could end up leading into some kind of Sasha Banks versus Nikki Cross type of feud to get the title on her. Yeah, a heel turn would be better. I'd love if they even did that on Sunday night. Sasha Banks gets the big pop coming in, looking like she's going to save her former teammate, only to turn on her. It gets me fired up. I mean, Adam, I had a dream I hadn't made it. But there's nothing stopping me right now, right? I don't know the rest of the words to that weird song. But let's see some boss time. All right, Michael Cole, let's do this.
It is boss time. And a little fun fact I noticed on Raw is every time there was someone who had maybe it was SmackDown actually, but they had like a Bring Sasha Banks Back sign in the crowd. And every time the guy lifted it, Kevin Dunn immediately cut away from it. So it's either they don't want her name mentioned on TV, which would mean she's not coming back, or they don't want to spoil it and have her name out there for fans to see it. So I found that to be very interesting. Also interesting, BC, the Braun Strowman-Bobby Lashley match. What did I say to you after coming out of Raw 2 weeks ago? I said, this match could actually main event Extreme Rules. You may have thought that was a little hyperbolic. That's fine. But they are going to be in a last man standing match on this show. I am completely excited for it. What do you think happens here? Do you think that Bobby Lashley can win this match?
I don't know. That would depend on how long you would want this storyline and this angle and feud to go, and whether you actually had legitimate plans for Bobby Lashley to like go up to the title level, maybe actually have that Braun Strowman feud that we sort of said makes too much sense not to do it, two former MMA fighters coming together. So if you're going to go in that way, the kind of push you need is to get him past Braun Strowman right now, who again is sort of lost in the, we're not really doing anything with him. We don't really see him as a title contender. We're just going to have him blow stuff up. The good news is when he blew stuff up a couple Raws ago, it was absolutely fantastic. And what that moment did, Adam, is I think it put a little bit of pressure on them. We can't have a ho-hum Extreme Rules last man standing match. There isn't much extreme about this card if we're being really honest. We're in Philly. Let's get extreme. Let's have this last man standing match be all over the arena. Let's have an even bigger next level type explosive way to end this match. And how about let's give Bobby Lashley that push? He's not great, but there's a way you can present him, and he's not getting any younger in his early 40s, that you can still get something out of him with those muscles, and you can still get him closer to a feud that matters. I don't know what I predicted for this, but you just talked me into wanting Bobby Lashley to win.
Oh, for me, it's a no-doubter. That's my prediction because, I mean, you see this badass footage here. This is awesome. Like, this is what we want out of professional wrestling. It's what we want out of WWE. And to their credit, they followed that up with a couple promos from Bobby Lashley that are what we want out of Bobby Lashley. And, look, I don't think anyone ever wants Braun Strowman losing because a guy his size, his talent, he shouldn't, you know, in kayfabe, really ever lose. He should probably already have been champion, right? But if you're not going to have him at champion, and you're looking at Seth Rollins maybe coming out of Extreme Rules as champion, we'll discuss that in a little bit, He needs a heel challenger for SummerSlam. And I seriously buy in to Seth Rollins, Bobby Lashley for the Universal Championship at SummerSlam, especially because that presents a really good opportunity for Brock Lesnar either to get involved in the match or possibly start the feud with Bobby Lashley that we've wanted to see from Brock Lesnar for so long. So, look, it's time to put Bobby Lashley over. It's time to give him a chance. They're paying him a lot of money. He's a big name. I think you have Bobby Lashley win this match. To me, it's a no-brainer.
And by the way, real quick on Braun Strowman, we have optimism that the future's changing with Paul Heyman and Eric Bischoff now supposedly heavily involved in creative moving forward as we head into the Big Fox launch. So can we do something different with Braun Strowman? Can he not be Andre the Giant 2.0 and the king of blow-up things? Can we go back? Like, I don't need him to be the Big Show of this era. Adam, you know what I want him to be? That badass heel he was when he originally debuted on the main roster with the Wyatt family, and he used to lift people up and choke them out cold. I think there's a ton of money in him as a giant feud. I'm sorry, as a giant heel feuding against your top babyfaces where you don't even necessarily need to give him the title. I think when you keep him a babyface in a quote-unquote attraction, and then you never really cash that in terms of making him feel credible, he feels kind of underwhelming overall.
I do think it's smart that they made this a last man standing match because it does actually give Lashley the opportunity to win without really hurting Strowman. You know, he can pin him with a forklift or, you know, throw a bunch of ladders over him or pin him under the stage. There's ways to get Lashley the win and make it look like it just happened versus that he actually physically dominated and defeated Braun Strowman. And honestly, if they decide to put Strowman over, same thing the other way. It would allow Lashley to save a little bit of face. We're going to talk about two guys who are much, much smaller than Bobby Lashley and Braun Strowman. Those are Ricochet and AJ Styles in a United States Championship match. Ricochet coming in as the champion, just defeated Samoa Joe at Stomping Grounds. It's his first title in WWE, BC, never even had one in NXT. I'm sorry, he did have the North American Championship, but in the main roster, first ever title. Meanwhile, you have AJ Styles coming off a year-long run as WWE champion, looking to win the U.S. title for the third time. We've gotten plenty of taste of this on Raw. How excited are you from this match? I talked about, you know, Cesaro and Aleister Black stealing the show and possibly being one of the matches of the year. This is right up there, too.
This might be my most anticipated match. Obviously, the in-ring potential is huge with the two workers. Loved what they've been doing on Raw. When you add in the club, Gallows and Anderson back with a heel AJ Styles, you now have storyline wrinkles of what you can do. And when you look at this, I don't expect the title to come off of Ricochet after he just won it. Yet at the same time, I'm not really sure who's going to win it here. A heel AJ Styles would be fantastic with the title and two pieces of muscle around him. If you're going to do a longer AJ Styles Ricochet feud that can extend us through SummerSlam, maybe you want the belt to go hot pocket onto AJ and have Ricochet maybe win it back. The fact is that I don't really have a predictable outcome here means that I'm expecting them to wow me, and I think they certainly have the superstars to do that.
Absolutely. I mean, there's no question the talent that these two bring. Having the club there certainly adds a level of intrigue. We always talk that we don't like 50-50 booking, but that's kind of what we've seen with these two guys. And something really has to give here. I don't necessarily think it's great for Styles to lose to Ricochet, you know, on a pay-per-view like this. But at the same time, as a heel, he's more able to absorb such a loss, especially if Ricochet wins via roll-up or a schoolboy or something like that, and doesn't just straight up pin him 1-2-3. So I do think there's an out for Ricochet for AJ Styles more so to get out of this feud and move forward. But at the same time, it feels to me a little bit like they rushed this. This would have been a great feud for SummerSlam to build up all the way, have the club terrorize Ricochet, have Ricochet find some people to get his back, maybe a Cedric Alexander, some other people on the roster. But all of a sudden, they're giving it to us at Extreme Rules without a stipulation. No Extreme Rules or anything like that.
Well, you may end up getting what you want, though, Adam, because Extreme Rules ends up being an appetizer towards SummerSlam that this could really turn out to be exactly what we want. My question is, who would get Ricochet's back in the end? What if it was Finn Balor, and what if that led to Balor joining the dark side? A lot of possibilities here. I know Finn Balor has other business on another brand. Just trying to get a little creative here.
Yeah, I mean, look, you had Triple H hug Ricochet after he won the U.S. Championship. What if you bring him in? Who knows where this could go? But I am excited for the match. It does have the potential to steal the show along with that Aleister Black and Cesaro match. And we'll see. We'll see if it continues on to SummerSlam, BC. Something I know you and I both hope does not continue at least past Extreme Rules, Roman Reigns and The Undertaker against Shane McMahon, Andrew McIntyre. This is a no-holds-barred tag team match, one of the other stipulation matches on the show. I mean, look, we saw Kevin Owens come out and really rip Shane McMahon and how much he's been on TV. But if I'm being totally honest, the build to this has not been terrible.
It's it's The Undertaker in 2019. It's Patrick Ewing in an Orlando Magic jersey. Get it off my screen. I think the way that this whole build has happened shows you the differences in philosophy. This Roman versus Shane and others feud has gone on way too long. So what was WWE and maybe Vince's decision at some point? How do we spice this up? How do we make people care and start cheering Roman? We bring back The Undertaker. Your ultimate thrill ride was supposed to have been your last ride, Callaway. Why are you back? And then it shows you what we saw this week. You and I already broke it down in our extended podcast of how great Kevin Owens was on SmackDown on Tuesday night, giving you the little bit of Steve Austin, little bit of CM Punk feels, and the potential of what that means, him opposite Shane. Is he going to run in on this match? I think that element adds a ton of intrigue. I need us to get away from Roman Reigns feuding against these heels, and I need Undertaker to not show up on my screen on Sunday night in Philadelphia. I said it. I'm here. I'm not going anywhere. I'm a man. I'm still 40 for another few weeks. Come at me, dead man.
I guess the point more than anything is that I was not offended by really what they've done, especially on Tuesday night on SmackDown. I thought it was a strong finish to sell that match. And listen, if anything that they do that gets Roman Reigns cheered is ultimately a win for WWE. And the truth is that doesn't happen that often these days. Roman Reigns getting organic cheers that are not almost pity cheers in some way. So, you know, he got cheered on Tuesday. I think there's the opportunity for these two to work together well in the match. I'm glad it's a no-holds-barred match because it takes a lot of pressure off The Undertaker to perform really as a wrestler, which is what he's getting paid to do in this match, right? And ultimately, my hope is that the faces just win here and we move on with the rest of our lives because, as you said, any other result, anything else that keeps The Undertaker on my TV in 2019, or keeps Roman Reigns involved in a feud with Shane McMahon and Drew McIntyre, where he's already beat McIntyre, and it's just like, enough already, like, let's get on with it. We wanted McIntyre to get that win over Reigns to catapult him, and we never got it. So for me, I hope this is the end-all be-all, right?
Why don't we just make it a six-man with Elias and Kane while we're at it?
God, the last, if I don't need Undertaker on my screen in 2019, I definitely don't need Knoxville Mayor Glenn Jacobs on my screen donning the red mask in 2019. What I do need, BC, on my screen in 2019 and Sunday at Extreme Rules, 7 p.m. Eastern on the WWE Network, is Kofi Kingston coming in as a WWE champion against Samoa Joe. And BC, spoiler alert, I'm picking Samoa Joe to win the WWE title. What say you?
I'm right with you because it would seem like it's the perfect time because it doesn't seem like the perfect time. A lot of us thought, great story for Kofi at WrestleMania, great moment. Not really cut out to be a long-term champion. In fact, I think the last few pay-per-views I sat here and said, it's time to take the belt off Kofi. Something has happened since then. I think Kofi has really stepped it up and has been a fine champion in a lot of ways. His match quality has been through the roof. And last week's middle finger to Samoa Joe certainly had that next level sort of, we going PG-13 here? This is great. Kofi, kind of a badass. Love where this is going. With all that said, now is the time. Samoa Joe is hot. You've heated him up so many times than to do nothing with him. It would make so much more of an impact to have Samoa Joe beat Kofi here, the beloved champion, and do it in a disrespectful, physical, violent way that not only is he the right guy to finally taste that level of a title, but even if you wanted to double it back, even if you're Vince and going, well, the people really love cheering for Kofi at WrestleMania, let's give it to them again at SummerSlam. Even if it was that predictable, Adam, where Samoa Joe would win the title here and then lose it back to another giant babyface pop in Toronto, I'm here for it. Let's do it. Let's see what Samoa Joe can do each week with a title. He's the best promo in the company right now. Daniel Bryan's close, but Samoa Joe does that heel, I'm going to kick your R stuff, even better than Daniel Bryan does the environment stuff.
We also, by the way, just badly need heel champions. Like, I believe all the singles champions right now are faces, and that is a massive problem when you're going into SummerSlam. And at SummerSlam, you want faces to win championships, right? So at their biggest shows, that's what you want to happen. But right now, who's going to beat them? Other faces? No. There's a major dearth of heel champions right now. And Samoa Joe, I mean, look, you can like Daniel Bryan. You can like Brock Lesnar. Samoa Joe is my favorite heel in the company. This is a great feud already, despite it being somewhat hotshot. And you know I hate that he's a Raw superstar contending for a SmackDown title. But you know what? In this era, in this age of the wild card rule, who cares? It's over. The roster split's basically done. I'd much rather get the title on Samoa Joe. Kofi has had a fantastic run. I thought he was a great champion from the very beginning. It took you a little bit to come around. I don't care. I'm glad we're on the same side right now. But Samoa Joe would be an amazing WWE champion too. And he's the perfect type of guy to take the title into SummerSlam, as you mentioned. And if you want Kofi to win it back, that's fine. We're like 6 weeks away from SummerSlam. You got plenty of time to build that. Have Kofi earn a number one contendership again. That's great. What I want to see is a guy with the WWE title who really makes it feel like the WWE title. And we had that with AJ Styles. We had it with Daniel Bryan. Kofi brings a different light to it, and I'm happy for him. You know I was rooting for him months before WrestleMania ever started, but he's had his run. It's time to take the title off him. It's time to give it to a dominating guy like Samoa Joe and just bring that prestige to the title that we want to see, where you really think, man, I don't know who's going to beat this guy. And that's how I kind of feel when I look at Samoa Joe. And look, maybe I only feel that way for 6 weeks and Kofi wins, like you said, and like I kind of co-signed there. But it's something that I'm extremely excited about.
Can I fantasy book and fill your veins with excitement here? All right. Kofi is going to lose the title on Sunday against Samoa Joe. But New Day will have won the championships early in the cards. So Kofi's now a tag team champion again. It's a soft landing. We head into SummerSlam, where Kofi says, not only am I getting my rematch against Samoa Joe for the title, but hey, Big E and Xavier, I'll defend with you. I'll help you out. Accidentally, Kofi costs his New Day brethren the tag titles at SummerSlam. We head to that title match later against Samoa Joe, and it's Big E who turns back into Dolph Ziggler bodyguard Big E with the African collars and turns heel on Kofi Kingston. And then we get that New Day implosion feud that I've always wanted. Kofi on one side, Big E on the other, Xavier Woods trying to keep the cohesion between them, but it's unsuccessful. There's big business there, and you can do that with Kofi either winning the belt back from Samoa Joe to get the big pop moment and then have Big E turn, or you can have Big E cost him the title later. I love what you do for me. New Day explosion feud. It's time to cash in on it.
I thought you were doing a Toyota promo there or something
close,
like that.
I was close.
That's why these guys, every time we talk to Kofi, every time we talk to Xavier, every time we talk to Big E, that's why they call you BC a wedge driver, because you're trying to drive them apart. It's not going to happen. You can book the damn territory all you want. WWE isn't splitting up New Day. And more importantly, New Day isn't letting WWE split up New Day. And we talk about relationships and people not getting split up. Well, we hope this one lasts a long time. It is the main event. At least we expect it to be the main event of Extreme Rules. Winners take all. Mixed tag team Extreme Rules match. You see the title there. I'm not making it up. Seth Rollins defending his Universal Championship. Becky Lynch defending her WWE Raw Women's Championship in the same match against Baron Corbin and Lacey Evans. We have seen these title matches now individually, one-on-one, on two consecutive shows. The additional stipulation here is if Corbin and Lacey Evans lose, they never get another title match against Rollins and Lynch respectively. And if Rollins and Lynch win, hey, they're the champions. They don't have to deal with it anymore. We get new feuds heading into SummerSlam. Brian, there's a lot of ways this match can go. There's no elimination. There's no BS confusing rules here outside of the confusion that you already see on your screen. Is there any possible way that Seth Rollins and Becky Lynch both lose their titles on Sunday night?
I mean, it doesn't seem likely. I'm trying to create a scenario here, okay? The Baron Corbin factor really makes you lose any belief that they would put the biggest title on him, even for a short period of time. Yeah, he could sell it as a heel who cheated to win or whatever, but no. My only confusion is this. This feels more like a SummerSlam match. It's for the little bit more of the casuals and the kiddies. It's a mixed gender match. It feels like it's the perfect one you would do on SummerSlam and have the babyfaces win and have Seth and Becky hug and kiss and we're dating and it's great and we figure it out and it's, well, it's great. But yet it's the main event potentially of Extreme Rules a month, 2 months before. That's a little bit interesting to me. I know we're going to over-smark ourselves here and try to, you know, smark ourselves into a corner here, but is there any chance that that's the direction we're going to put the heels over for a short title run and Becky and Seth's relationship now gets questioned? And I know there's some that question whether it's actually a real relationship or is it for storyline purposes only. There's some drama you could make there, Adam. I mean, I know we're seeing it maybe over the top with the Canalises in terms of Maria yelling at him and stuff, but what if all the build to the storyline is true? Would you be entertained by the idea of Seth and Becky losing this and one of them blaming the other one for losing the title, and then you get the long-term drama that I guess could lead to a mixed rematch or it could just lead to some other craziness?
It's just, I mean, who cares? Like, I think it's a fine storyline for a mid-level pay-per-view to get us through it on the way to SummerSlam. But if you're going to rebook this for SummerSlam and keep this going, and your main storyline going into SummerSlam is Becky and Seth being mad at each other for losing each other's titles, and maybe having fourth matches in a row against Baron Corbin and Lacey Evans, then you don't want people to watch SummerSlam. You don't want people to buy tickets to go to Toronto, whatever stadium or arena it is it's going to be in. I'm sorry, guys, up there. I forget where it's going to be. You don't want that because those are horrible bookings. These have been terrible feuds, and fans have told you that they're sick of both. So they're at least setting it up for a happy ending where not only do they retain their titles, they're a couple, it's a feel-good moment, so on and so forth, but they're also ridding us of Baron Corbin and Lacey Evans from the title picture. If they don't go that way, then all of the bad blood that we have felt about this, seeing Baron Corbin in the main event for like 9 months now, definitely since the Royal Rumble, and seeing Lacey Evans get this massive push immediately coming out of WrestleMania, despite really not deserving it, despite being a decent talker and having a decent finisher, then you're just continuing this over and over again, and you're basically telling me that nothing that they have done the last 3 months really matters because they can give us a convoluted stipulation main event with a relationship angle, and that's how we're going to send you into SummerSlam. No, there's no way they're that bad, and maybe if those were the plans, hopefully with Paul Heyman and Eric Bischoff at the helm, those are not going to be the plans, BC. I can't stomach it. Seth Rollins, Becky Lynch, retain those titles, head into SummerSlam with separate singles feuds for your titles.
All right, but here's the deal, though. Paul Heyman is part of this right now and is a genius. So what if the heels do win on Sunday night and we have a heel go home and people are like, wow. And what if Becky costs Seth accidentally the match and their titles? And what if over the next few weeks, Lacey Evans starts getting chummy with Seth? First, he's like, no way, get away from me. But then eventually she manipulates him into believing that Becky cost him the titles and Becky has ruined his reign and brought his career down and his value down. Eventually, in almost a Elizabeth Mega Powers type situation, but even deeper this time, Lacey brings Seth over to the dark side. They're secretly dating. She coerces Baron Corbin into giving Seth a title shot, then cheats to make sure Corbin loses. Seth wins back his title. They're a power couple. And then Becky, needing a super babyface by her side, calls up Hulk Roman Reigns. And then our SummerSlam match is Becky and Roman against heel Seth and Lacey Evans. No? I got myself fired
up. What you're doing is like Attitude Era / Ruthless Aggression Era booking with PG era characters. No, thank you. Don't want it. I don't want any more mixed tags outside of the mixed match challenge. I like that very much. It's fun. Great. You want to have a mixed tag on Raw? Great. Good for you. I don't need it main eventing shows. I don't need two titles on the line in a single match. They tried that back in the day. It kind of worked then. It doesn't work in a mixed tag match where only the women can fight the women and only the men can fight the men because we don't do intergender rules in WWE. Look, Brian, the best thing WWE can do. I've said this many times on the podcast. I say this all the time on Twitter. Sometimes the most predictable finish is the best finish. Give us the storyline we want. Let the faces win. Let us go out on a high note. And then carry the goodwill over to Raw, which is really going to be the start, from what we understand, of the Paul Heyman executive director era. And then move on to SmackDown. Same thing with Eric Bischoff. That's the way that we need to end Extreme Rules on Sunday night.
Hey, not the way I would have booked it, but, you know, that's why I'm sitting in this chair in my basement talking to you right now. Truth.
All right, Adam, that'll wrap up a loaded show, getting people fired up for what was and what is to be. We have AEW and WWE this week. A little bit of a combat sports lull before we turn the corner to Pacquiao Thurman. So you better believe the State of Combat will have you covered, not just with a preview show, but with your boy BC on the ground, CBS HQ on the ground, getting excited. You got a feel yet? Who you like? Because I know you're on this run of predicting winners here in combat sports.
Well, so to clarify, the winners I'm predicting are rounds, over unders on rounds. And I've also been predicting winners, and I've been right about all except Anthony Joshua. Obviously, no one was right about that. I expect no one was right about that. Is it wrong that I feel Keith Thurman here?
No, this fight is a 50-50 fight because both have like legitimate questions. Because if Thurman becomes the Thurman of old and sits down on his power punches, like Pacquiao could be in trouble. But if Thurman tries to box, somehow 40-year-old Pacquiao still has it. Like, it's an interesting fight.
At some point, it has to give out, though. And Thurman's the kind of guy where I'm like, he's talented enough and skilled enough where maybe it's now. But how much longer is Manny going to do this, man?
Well, until somebody probably sends him to the deep, dark depths of Marquez hell again, you know, another time. It's interesting. I don't know if he needs the money anymore. You always hear the rumors, but still viable. Like, this is weird. It's not him selling his name here. He's actually a viable welterweight contender, where if he wins this, it's like, good Lord, is he going to fight Spence next? Who knows? You know,
isn't he a senator or something in the Philippines?
Yes, I don't know how he works that out. Where he
so does can, he really need the money? Isn't he not like embezzling funds in the Philippines? Come on.
He has a high expenses in the hundreds of people that he supposedly brings with him in his extended entourage and takes care of them. And I don't know what he does. I can't comment on that. But the SOC will give you what you want. Shout out to the folks at Ballsy. Adam, I got a nice care package in the mail from the folks at Ballsy. I'm talking about nut rub, sack spray, and ball wash to keep them things clean during this swamp ass summer. So while I'm in Vegas, I don't want swamp ass in Vegas this week coming up. So I will be using those products like crazy, brother.
Why are you getting that and I'm not? I'm in Florida.
You could use a little bit of sack spray, Adam, probably. I don't really.
I absolutely could. And since we're giving shout-outs, shout-out to Solo and Hex and Push, which sent me a couple backpacks. The Solo backpack, no joke, it's replacing my CBS Sports backpack that I use all the time to carry my laptop and stuff. It's legit. So
look at this merch hound.
If we're shilling at the end of the show, I need to give a shout out to Solo. Really, really high quality backpack. Great product.
And shout out to my new venture on Showtime, our partner with CBS, Below the Belt, of course, with Brendan Schaub under his banner, a weekly combat sports show with Luke Thomas and myself called Morning Combat every Monday at noon, streaming live on YouTube. You can check that out.
And also shout out to, no, I'm just kidding. I don't have a show.
Well, you got this show, State of Combat, coming into your ear hole. That's it. That's all I got. All right. The show's over. The interview's over. All right.
Kato, say goodbye.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye.
Goodbye.
Okay, now get out of here.
That's a little rough, Randy.
Yeah, but it is rough. Yeah, wrestling is a rough sport.
Adam, you got any message for the people?
Just two words. We out.